Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Scotchcast. We had kind of a cold open with this, that just did a wonderful line of discussion happened for a good 12 minutes, and then Cynic's like, all right, let's start. So this week's episode is featuring self-confessed Cynic, myself, Thurbleton, Noob Rama, and joining us again, Squiddle. So hope you enjoy this week's episode, and hopefully see you next week for E3 talk. We're making predictions that we'll be there. Not at E3, just we'll have an episode. And here you go. Bye.
Situation.
I always gave a valid reason and he ignored it.
I didn't ignore it.
Do you have enough money to live?
Yes.
Comfortably?
Yes.
For how long?
For 2 months right now.
Okay, that's kind of rough. A six is kind of my usual checkpoint beyond which I'd start spending money. 2 months is kind of iffy. I don't know. But depend, like, if you get a base one, that's about $300. That's just like eating.
He doesn't want the base one.
Shut up. Shut up.
He doesn't want the base one.
Again, you know,
which one do you want?
My ideal one is the black on black stainless steel, so $1,100.
Shut up!
$1,100? Shit,
that's $1,100?
Yeah.
Well, isn't the base on like 300 or some shit?
That's for the tiny screen. The bigger screen is 400 base.
Okay, but what's the difference between that and the one you're getting?
Let's do this the proper way here.
God,
we'll send this link to everyone in the chats.
Let's have a look. This is better make it to the show somehow. In fact, you know what? This is cold open.
I'm recording.
This is the cold opening. This is the cold opening. So, this is the Scotchcast for anyone listening. Cynic speaking, Squiddle making bad decisions, Hamilton over there somewhere, and Noob Rama invisible in the background. We are now looking at a very nice-looking 42mm space black stainless steel case with space black stainless steel Link bracelet Apple iWatch.
So the Link bracelet alone is, I think, like $500.
Get just a different for the bracelet, man. Get a fucking different bracelet.
That one, that looks really nice.
It looks really nice.
But that price tag is just
who has
fuck
money
off,
to live off man. For 2 months.
But if I get just the plastic band, as I call it, and standard pricing, it's a little bit better.
Wait, buy it when you have a job? Like, why does it have to be now?
It doesn't.
It's not a multiplayer game. It's not like, everyone has an iWatch and they're playing their iWatch games. I gotta get in before
because I saw Stephen Colbert have one in his video he did for the new late night spot, and I thought, man, that looks good on his wrist.
Good looking watch, I have to say.
It's a good looking man with a good looking
I prefer, that's the thing, right? If you want a good-looking watch, you may as well get, like, a Skagen or something, like, actually
sold watches for years. I don't want a standard watch anymore. I want something.
I want a Moto X more than an iWatch.
I want an Xbox on my wrist. So, I'm going to have to wait a couple years.
I hate to break it to you, but that's not what an iWatch is. An iWatch is just kind of like, you know, this thing with a bad interface that kind of tells the time sometimes. That's what the iWatch is.
Get the Moto 360. That's a way more classier watch than the iWatch, to be honest.
The Android interface is nicer than the Apple.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, out of a job, wanting to spend $600+, who knows? I'm a crazy
Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. $1,100. No income. Watch. Those things...
Yeah, so if you spent $1,100 on a watch, how much would that affect your ability to live sustainably for the
month? Oh, it'd be stupid. It would be
maybe just putting it out there. Maybe as just further incentive to get the job, a job, any job is upon getting a job, reward yourself with an Apple Watch.
Because see, when I get the job, then I'm not going to want to spend the money because I'm going to have the income coming in. I'm going to be like, I don't really want to spend money on it, you know?
Well, like when you get the job, you have something to do other than sit there and look at a photo of a watch for an hour. That's the main thing. Like, the reason people spend money when they don't have jobs is because they have nothing else to do with their time.
Yes, and I buy out of boredom. And then when I have something to do, it's like, I don't really want to spend the money on that.
Yeah.
I can't really justify that, Yeti.
Yep,
I can justify it when I don't have a job, but when I have a job, I can't justify spending the money. I don't know.
You know what? And that's probably a good place to be in when you have a job. In the non-job part of that equation,
You could be like Cynic and buying $12,000 televisions, but...
Yeah, but I have a job.
Yeah, exactly.
So we talked about this. Is that the TV on the Twitter thing that I got you in an argument with? So I bought that TV. That TV was sold out nationwide. They oversold that model to the point where you couldn't get it anywhere.
I don't know about this. What is this? Is it Panasonic something?
Upon the release of the episode that you confessed your desire to get that TV, Squiddle, an avid listener, I guess, of the show, decided to chime in on Twitter, at the Lincoln Cast on Twitter, conversation. Uh-huh. And
I'm sorry, I didn't see this.
Unfortunately, Shimboy sided with Squiddle on this, and I was just like beset from all sides of insanity to buy a giant TV.
Yes!
You guys are crazy. No, I didn't get one, but Squiddle apparently is on Team Big TV.
Yes!
Yeah, oh, so man. I have the 65-inch hanging on my wall right now.
Fuck, you need a 65-inch television?
In all of its 4K goodness.
It's retarded.
Under 65, it looks so small. Like, you don't need that shit.
It does look small once you've been staring at it. Now I want like an 85 or something. I need something a little bit bigger. But
it has to be in proportion to your room. If an 85-inch TV is what you need to make it look right in your room.
Oh no, this thing looks massive in my room. Like, I don't need anything bigger, but
you just wanted to cover the entire area of the room.
I want to be able to just like lay on the ground and in the corner of my eye still see 65% of the screen. You know,
oh man, it's so good. Like, I'm sitting on my dining table. And my TV is just in front of me, past like the chair, and it's too small. It's 32 inch. Like, it's too small. I need a TV
that is a small television. But I don't think like 54 or something like that. That's a sizable television.
I just got I got rid of mine to get the 65. That's not that size. But
I'm gonna have
my story behind this one was, and I think it was the same model. Was that you couldn't get anywhere in the store I went to go buy it at. It's kind of like an electronics boutique store. They're not like a Best Buy, but they sell a lot of high-end stuff.
Yeah.
And so this was their floor model. That was the only one they had left. And so I said, well, if it's the floor model,
give us some money off, man.
Give me some money off. So I think in total that one was, with everything said and done, it was $2,700, but after they knocked off all their stuff, it was like $2,400 for the TV.
Not bad for a 65.
And full coverage and warranty. And the guy goes, as I'm checking out, he goes, oh, here are your 3D glasses. I said, you can keep those. I'm never going to use that. I don't give two shits about 3D. He goes, okay, well, we'll keep them here if you ever want to come back and get them. I said, that's not going to happen.
Don't you feel compromised, though, knowing that hundreds of maybe even thousands of other people have watched through that television, and you're not the only one. Doesn't that feel dirty?
No, because the things I've watched through this television, they should be happy that they don't have it on their wall anymore.
That's the thing. You want a burnt-in TV.
Like, yeah.
TVs are better after about 60 hours, 80 hours.
Well, it was nice because they had already color balanced it and everything for their store and their Sony boutique area. Where it was hanging, so it was kind of nice to have that already.
Oh, yeah, you actually got the Sony TV, the good, like, high, real low response time Sony. Is that the one you got?
Mm-hmm. Wait, was this while you still had a job?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, okay, there's an interesting story behind that, too. So, I had the job. This was because my girlfriend and I previously broke up, and in the midst of our relationship throughout that year, we had gotten rid of a lot of her electronics and brought in a lot of mine, so... I didn't want to leave her with nothing, left her with everything. I felt it was only right to do so, to be a gentleman about it. So she got my receiver, you know, some speakers, my TV. So when I came back, I had kind of nothing.
Yeah, but and a fantastic excuse to upgrade.
Exactly. So, but I didn't have the credit line or the money to do so at that time. But who does? The only other people that spend more money than I do in electronics, my parents at this store, have a credit line with this company. And so I was able to do. I was able to pull the family deal where I pay my family back for them and their credit line. The problem is my mother left me with that open at about 6 o'clock at night after I had a beer from the fridge at this place that they had, and then ended up getting a new subwoofer, a new receiver, the TV, the wall mounts, the power washer as power comes into the TV. And then all said and done, I think there was like 5 G's on that when I was done. So I have a little bit of a credit line to pay back right now.
But it's, that's 5 G's of American money. So here that would be like equivalent of like an $8,000 outlay. But that's still
that's like $1 million Canadian, to be honest.
But it's not bad. It's only about like a $130 a month. And in the time frame we all paid off, so I'm not too.
Yeah, maybe not get the iWatch. Yeah, probably. No.
Yeah, maybe not.
What are you talking about?
So I tried to pull a fast one like I've done before with PayPal. And use my PayPal credit limit, which is not extensively good right now. And I submitted to Apple for the Apple Watch using PayPal, hoping that they would just extend my credit line.
Nice.
Came from an expensive purchasing area, Apple. They decided not to, but it waited there for about 30 days in limbo, saying that we haven't received money yet. And PayPal's like, well, we're still in processing, but Apple's like, we haven't received money yet.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, maybe it'll go through. Who knows? I'm a horrible individual, I know.
So welcome to the Scotchcast.
Is that really the opening?
Starting off strong.
Is this podcast now about just financial irresponsibility?
We are not experts. Do not listen to us. And you probably have already figured it out by now. But don't listen to us about money at all.
I mean, I guess to sort of counterbalance it, I've said a couple times, but I am still amazed that my like $600 investment 5+ years ago to get a projector has paid off. Like, it still hasn't broken. Those bulbs are like, you know, graded for like 2 to 3 years. And I use it moderately and all that, keep it in a well-ventilated area. But it, I just measured it, like just as Squiddle went down this rant, and it's like roughly an 80-inch screen.
Yeah,
it's not. It's not HD. It's not super, you know, 3D glass or anything. But for the low end of it, it's pretty good. I'm happy.
Saying if you want a 4K projector, they start at like 2.5K. It's not too bad. It's not too bad.
I don't need all those pixels.
Don't corrupt, sir.
So I've resolved to get a 390X probably before I go for the 4K TV. Only because that looks like a really nice card that's coming in. And I'm surprised I'm sticking with AMD. That's what surprised me. Like I was highly unimpressed by the 980 Ti specs and outlay. That was also announced slash.
But then you won't get the GeForce experience.
Yeah, how are you gonna? There's no GeForce experience with the AMDs, are there?
No.
But
I mean, you get
it tweaks your games and stuff, all that kind of stuff.
With AMD,
you get Raptor. That's what you get.
Also the
AMD Raptor.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to talk about how shitty that piece of crap software.
I haven't used it.
It's adware on your PC.
Well, not only that, when I go to optimize games, it says your games are now optimized, everything to low. I'm like, dude, I could have done this myself because I know exactly that's how the best they're going to run. But I said optimize for graphics, not performance.
Yeah. You guys are missing out on the biggest feature, TressFX.
Yeah.
Which I believe was AMD.
It was.
It was given free to anyone who wants to use it. So it's not necessarily.
It was optimized for AMD, though.
So I think I'll probably wait for something a good 50% more powerful than the current 980 Ti before I get a new card. Mainly because like a 980 Ti still only runs Witcher 3 on 4K at like 40 frames a second.
You should probably still wait. You should wait for the next gen of NVIDIA cards because generally speaking, AMD hasn't made a great showing since, you know, the 9800 AGP days.
You're actually probably correct with that. The 290 and 290X are actually still viable, even though they're
Definitely viable. But I think those are they're all. I don't want to say like niche. like price ranges.
They are
but niche. I mean, like, they're, I mean, at almost all, you know, major parts of a price range, you know, budget, moderate, and high end, that NVIDIA still sort of wrecks.
Yeah. NVIDIA, if you're looking at it for a $600 card, you're probably ending up with NVIDIA. The thing is with NVIDIA is they get those good deals with the
game companies.
So, like, you could have gotten a 970 with like you did with Witcher 3, just straight on. So it's in terms of like cost benefit, you're probably better off going with NVIDIA, assuming that the deals they have are games you don't have. Yep. But in the end, like, I only give a shit about what will run 4K well. And at the moment, nothing does.
Yeah. So. Yeah. In terms of 4K AMD, unless you're willing to, you know, piss money.
Well, nothing does. Even AMD, like, the 390X is rumored.
You haven't considered going the SLI Titan route yet.
No. Well, I specifically got a computer case that only fits one graphics card in it.
Is that personal restriction, knowing that you
personal.
Probably...
That is a known personal restriction, just in the same way that I did not play Dota 2, because I know I'll be horribly addicted to it if I play it. I also got a single graphics card, motherboard and...
Congratulations for living such a Spartan lifestyle.
Yeah.
Very astute.
So is it like a micro ATX and a server case, a server, or do you actually get like a small, what is your...
Oh, no, it's a mini ITX... A motherboard in a micro ATX case.
What's the case?
It is the Corsair, I think it's 350 or 250D.
Oh, that's a sexy case. That's a nice sexy case.
Yeah, it's a beautiful case. I actually like what I saw. But anyway, moving on from random technology talk with no real purpose.
Hey, there's always a purpose to random technology talk. Don't diss it that much. Come on.
Thurbleton.
What's up?
What have you been up to? Fortnite.
I sadly have not been playing a lot of games, but I mean, that's not true. I've been playing, you know, Payday, Spelunky, a little bit of Witcher, but not that far into it. Like, I finished the Bloody Baron stuff.
How'd you like it? Bloody Baron is, I think, early enough a game that we can talk about to some extent.
I enjoyed it. It's the decisions for choices. Like, it really is a, like, most people end up siding with the choice of, well, helping out the Baron out more opposed to other factions purely because a dialogue is formed with the Baron. And you don't, like, the other choice is just someone who, like, you don't know what their history is. So you assume it's a good decision.
Especially because, sorry, go ahead.
I have a question. So I have assisted the Bloody Baron up to the point where I'm looking for the other side of his quest now, going to the Bogs Lake or the Three whatever. So I haven't finished that part yet, but I found myself originally, like, just thinking this guy's a complete asshole, to actually, like, caring for him and feeling sorry for him in a way.
There's like no right option in that quest. Like, you either go the, hey, do you really care about individual free will, which doesn't make sense? Like, are you going to allow people to make bad decisions with their lives? Or are you going to side with someone who's probably a real asshole some of the time? Like, he's nice a lot of the time. He's helped out Siri. Like, he's... In terms of stuff we can obviously discuss, you're working with the Bloody Baron because he has information about Ciri, who's the person you're looking for in The Witcher 3. And he has so because he helped her out. Like, she's essentially your daughter. So he can be nice, but you also know that he can be a total fucking asshole, especially to, again, other members that are attached to his quest line. So it's a really interesting. I got to the point... I think I can say how mine ended up because I think everyone will have a slightly different way through this quest. Because there's so many, I didn't even know. I only recently found out that the game as a whole has multiple endings. So I'm terrified.
Oh,
I am terrified.
Oh, jeez.
At the amount of options that you have in this fucking game. But I had this point. It got to the point where the Baron for me hung himself at the end of this quest line.
I know what you did.
It's like, yeah. And it's because I went, hey, free will is important to me, and I guess my Geralt. So I sided along those sides of the options they're given, which essentially means that other people are allowed to go with their hearts, and in doing so, the Bratty Baron is left alone and lonely and kills himself. And you have this like crazy little like vision kind of thing that shows you like your option, like what you did, and like how that like branched off and ended up in your version of the reality. And I'm left in this weird situation where, like, you know what? Him being dead is probably good for the world, but the people who are replacing them aren't exactly nice either.
It's the devil you know is better than the devil you don't scenario.
But is it? I don't know.
Yeah.
At the moment, every time I go back to Velen, people are getting like mugged and shit, so probably not. Like every time I go back, someone's about to get raped, and then Geralt steps in and kills everyone. I don't know. It's very interesting how that ended up. But so Squids, how has your time been with Witcher 3? What's your impressions like?
So originally, I had gotten to the Bloody Baron's castle thing and doing that, and I had absolutely no money. I guess I had been playing just the storyline and not doing any side stuff, and I couldn't. Like I would do the whole MMO thing where you would buy a sword and then get one in doing something randomly that was better. And I'm like, why did I waste the 150, whatever it is?
And, yeah, never buy weapons.
In the thing. And so I was like, okay. And then I found out that there's all this side stuff. And I was playing on the medium difficulty. And so I was like, nope, I went to easy. And I just went back to the original area and did all of the question marks in a circle. The entire thing.
Yeah,
raped and pillaged, or whatever you want to call it, to the crazy.
All those places of power to essentially level yourself.
Yeah, and then that was my other thing. It's like I'm so underpowered for all these things they're wanting me to do, or I can't do anything. And then to the places of power, I was like, okay, this is how you're supposed to do that.
Yeah.
But
I actually wish the game followed through with that. Like,
I wish they would explain that more. They don't really tell you what those are. It's just, you run by there, your horse starts getting spooked out for, you know, creatures around there. And I'm like, I'm too low to do anything here. And you run away and you kind of never go back. At least nothing ever forces me to. But I found myself kind of getting annoyed and then not get annoyed, which I thought would become more annoying. And every time I want to find something to find Ciri, someone's like, well, you got to help me first. And I'm like, okay, so this is going to be the palette for this game.
Yes.
If I want something, I got to do this. But surprisingly enough, the tangents that are split off from those, from those quests are delightful and enjoyable.
Yeah.
And my frustration with just, I want to go to the next thing and find out what's going on is subdued with how fun what they want me to do is. So I'm actually,
I had the exact same thing. Like, I literally, you walk up to the Bloody Baron the first time and he gives us like really cool, like little, thing with Ciri, and actually, I guess I can say it now because it's in the old trailer. You play as Ciri for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really awesome. She plays really – I fucking love
her. I love her.
I enjoy playing as her more than as Geralt, only because she is so – Geralt. It's better than saying Gerald.
Yeah.
Like Dan Reichert.
So Geraldo.
Yeah, Geraldo. But yeah, it's just like she – the biggest issue is you can escape back away from combat pretty quickly for both Geralt or whatever, and Ciri.
Geraldo Rivera.
Yes. But in terms of like getting close back into a fight, that's like really annoying to try and like find the opportune time to do that, except when you're playing as Ciri, because she is just so much more mobile.
Her dodge is a teleport.
Yeah.
And her you hold down Y or whatever, or hold down right trigger, is like an AoE that expands how long, depending on how long you hold it out. That she does like six or so attacks within the AoE. So if you like hold it and there's only one enemy in that AoE, you just like can unleash on this one dude, which is fucking cool. Like I love balancing her powers. In fact, I would play a game where you played as Ciri, assuming she had more than what she like give you in The Witcher 3. Because her like whole thing's awesome.
I was very surprised. I was the only one mission so far that really gave me humbled me in how this game plays so far was when you're in the cave with the other witch lady and then you got to fight the one dude with the protective orb and shield. You have to basically, they freeze that one area and you have to kind of like stay in the bubble and dogs and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I had almost no food. I went in there almost unprepared, no food. Mm-hmm. you know, my I had I think one piece of meat, two waters, five bottles of beer or whatever it is.
This is still an easy, or are you now?
No, this was I didn't change it yet. This was still when it was on medium, and I didn't realize I really had to play not so heavy on attacking as I used to, because I would jump out of the bubble and then be killed more with that than the dogs would kill me. And then just fighting that one dude, I mean, mechanics, I'd never I wanted to play the game as more of a just run up to there and beat the crap out of something, but I actually had to use strategery and in fighting, and that kind of annoyed me at first. I know, right? Video games.
Yeah. So all right, go ahead.
I also like a quick question, because I know for easy, you can pretty much just like meditate whenever, as long as it's like you're not immediately in combat. Can you do that on normal as well? So like in between fights?
Yes, okay. Normal. It's just when you go the other two advanced ones, you can't.
So, I mean, like, you could, like, assuming you had alcoholest or whatever, you could use, like, some of your, like, the swallow and some of your potions, and then just rest in between fights and refresh?
Yeah, but the problem was I was having is that it kept dying.
And that is a problem.
And I'm playing on the PS4, so the load screens times are just horrendous. No. So
you didn't say that. You did not say you were playing
so, PS4. Yeah, so it was getting very frustrating, dying so many times. But finally figured it out that I found a trick with the AI, that the one dude you had to fight with the would attack the wizard chick and then just ignore me, and then I could kind of stand back and heal up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then kind of like just ping him a couple times. And I didn't realize, though, you had to kill the dogs that he summons out before his health gets back up.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, okay, well, I think I probably died at least 12, 15 times on that fight. So, yeah.
That is – and again, we're only talking about like the first 10 hours of a 100-plus hour game. Yeah. So don't worry too much about spoilers here. But like, and it's been fucking 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, I got a great spoiler. The game will end at some point.
Yeah, wow. So no. Like, that is the first fight where you literally are finally challenged. So honestly, like it's up until that point, like I played on normal at that stage. And up until that point, I was like finding it pretty like manageable, if not a bit easy. That fight was the first fight where I was like, wow, this game can actually kick your ass if it wants to. And because he's a level, and I was doing the quest at level. But it was just really a case where the enemies start hitting really hard at some point. And they also have quite a bit of health or like different mechanics to them, which make them interesting. It's only like after, so this is my question for you. How do you fight? What's your method? What's your tactics in Witcher 3?
So depending on what the enemy is, let's just say it's one big motherfucker. Okay. That I'm going after. My main thing is to use shield.
Gwen.
I'll get hit once, run back, charge it up again, run in, hit, get hit once, run back, charge again. That's my routine.
That's okay. So you are with that little tip, you're essentially ready to, because I actually bumped it up. So I was playing on normal, and then I was like, okay, once you upgrade Quinn a few times, especially when you get the second stage of it, which is you still have normal Quinn when you hit it, but
like the whole like the secondary option one.
Exactly. At level two, you hold it down, you have a bubble around you, and anything that hits you actually heals you.
Okay.
So that always heals you like for the amount, like some subset of the amount of damage they do to you normally. But essentially, as you level that up, you get it to the point where the bubble itself that you're holding out costs nothing. So essentially, you're sitting there, and you can just like, when you're in low health, you can just hold that thing out and just wait for the enemy to start hitting you and healing you. So that combined with another ability where when you hit 0 HP, you're healed for a specific amount for based on how much adrenaline you have, which is a whole different system which we won't get into. Essentially, I've gotten to the point where I'm level 20 now, playing on the second hardest difficulty, and I can take on level 30s.
Okay.
So like Red Skulls, almost double question mark level of enemies, because once you start using Quinn and using that self-healing and have that ability to push the attack when you need to and know that you'll be revived from 0 HP at least once. That game really opens up in terms of difficulty to the point where I actually think that you're probably playing the hardest part of the game right now. And once you level up a bit, say you get to level 12, 15, 20, then you can start thinking about bumping it up. I'm actually thinking about bumping it up to Death March, which is the hardest difficulty.
Yeah, I wish there was a way I could check and see, but I think I'm only like level 7 or 8. Like I'm not very, very high, but I still like to take on things that are higher than me and try to see if I can manage it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the level indicators they have on quests in The Witcher 3 are actually really lenient. So, for example, I just did a quest that was level 15, and the worst I fought during that quest was a group of 6 level 12s. So, and I was level 18 or something, so I just like wrecked the whole quest, even on Blood and Broken Bones, which is the second hardest difficulty. Later on, you kind of get the feeling that there's two types of ways they give you that recommended level. One is the most difficult enemy during this quest is this level, so that's your recommended level. So, for example, one of the quests you do to get gear is recommended level 17, but that is because the hardest enemy in that is level 17.
Okay.
So you can actually do it at level 14, and all you have to do is fight that one enemy at level 17. You have no problem.
Because I remember when they were my initial quest to take me out of the main area was like, you know, they were saying recommended level 7, and I think I was I was 5 at the time, and I'm like, why are you this is my it's the main storyline, but you're telling me to go here. So I started going there, but there were other things that caught me along the way that were letting me catch up till I didn't have any resistance really until I got in that cave, and that's when I was like, okay, this is what they probably meant when they said this area is
exactly.
For that. So,
overall, I just really like that way, the way that game is balanced. I really feel sorry for people who have that XP glitch. I haven't experienced it. Yeah, I haven't experienced it at all myself playing on PC. I don't know if it's a PS4 thing, a console thing, or whatever. It's the way I understand it, and I could be wrong because, again, I don't have it myself, is that it really affects completionists because how the game is programmed is that once you get 6 levels above a quest, the colors of the quest change. So if it's really dark red is really high above your level. Light red is a little bit above your level. Green is around your level range, so usually plus minus 3 or 4 or 5 levels. And then you get to white, which is 6 or more levels below you, and then you get gray. So gray is you don't get any XP for it. I might be getting mixed up here. Green, you get normal XP. Red, you get higher XP. And dark red, you get really high XP for doing the quest. Okay. So the way I understand it is for people who over-leveled content and starting to do white stuff, it got to the point where their primary quests, so their main quest, was white. And that stopped giving them XP at all when it's supposed to give them some. And then for some reason, there was a follow-on effect where it was some people, nothing was giving them XP. So kind of like weirdly chained on.
Huh.
So that's how I understand it. Or at some, it boils down to people not getting XP for main quests. And that is how you level in Witcher. So for example, I do a off-the-street quest, gives me 10 XP. I give a notice board quest that usually gives me like 100, 200 XP. You do a main quest that usually gives you like 1,000, 1,200 XP. So if you don't get those main quests XP bumps, you just won't level really like at all. So yeah, that's like a major bug that they've said they'll be fixing in 0.5. So 0.05, which is due this week sometime or next week sometime.
Hmm.
Along with a bunch of other shit, a bunch of other fixes. So I feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
It's definitely where I am in the quest. I've finally got to. And the reason I want to talk about Witcher 3 this week is because last week I said the graphics weren't that impressive. Where do you stand on that, Squids?
I have two massive PCs in this household, but they're both dual video cards in each one of them, high end processors, 36 gigs of RAM. But the RAID's broken on my hard drives and I've lost all my games. So I'm kind of deterred from fixing these things right now out of a job and kind of frustrated with it. I think it should be making them work, but I haven't. So I bought it on PS4 and I'm actually I'm happy. I mean, I'm not, I know it can look a lot better. I know it can look, you know, phenomenal and photorealistic, but you know, sitting back staring at a 65-inch beautiful 4K TV, you really kind of just get lost in the immersion.
Dothan's shaking his head here.
Especially when you pull that monitor off the wall with the bracket that's mounted close to you. It's still a great experience sitting from the couch being able to play that.
So I wasn't that impressed. I'm again running it at 1080p, not 4K, but ultra for everything. Using Raptor to optimize my settings.
Oh, brilliant.
That's a
great idea.
So I went into it and it was...
So everything was like, low quality, right? Is that what you're saying?
So everything was set to ultra, but it was running at like 40 to 60. It's like in that range. So I turned off VSync and limited the FPS to 60. So I don't get screen tearing, and now it actually runs pretty much at 60 all the time. So it's nice. I have to say that I wasn't that impressed most of the game until I finally... So you have to get to level 16, you can finally go to Skelliger, which is the third and final area. So as you know, like, are you still in White Orchard at the moment? Oh, no, you're not. You're in Velen now.
I'm
the Bali Baron.
Yeah, and then I went to the first main city area.
Novigrad, to the
north. It was kind of unimpressed with the main
city. Really?
Well, there's not... Like, there's there? I was expecting there'd be like more to do, and at least I haven't seen anything yet.
To be specific, which main city? Are you talking about Novigrad? Because there's a lot to do in Novigrad.
The one where the Barons...
The one with all the red flags.
Yes.
Opposed to... Yeah, okay.
Think.
The one that's...
It's the ships. It's got the harbor.
Eastern one.
So, because that city has like three notice boards in it, and when you're walking around, there's a shitload of like random side stuff that just pops off. Like I'm walking down the street, and I get like this chick who walks up to me and goes, "Oh, can you help me?" I'm like, "Okay, sure." And you go to her place, and these dudes, like, it turns out she was working for these dudes, and they try to kill you, and then you kill them, obviously. And it turns out one of them was holding like a note, which leads you like on this other side quest. That's just like a normal side thing that happens in Novigrad. I'm not sure how much of that you've seen, but Novigrad.
I guess I don't know. Maybe not much. I didn't spend a lot of time running through there.
From what the feel is between the two cities, it seemed more like Novigrad was a city that was encompassed on itself. And so there's the Thieves Guild inside. There's all the different like their internal factions, internal strife, internal missions. Whereas the city Squirrel's talking about, I have the map here. I'm going to look at this up while talking.
Yeah, let me look at Witcher map and I could tell you.
Yeah, but, okay, another thing. I don't know, like, the people who bought this on Steam missed out, but if you get it on PS4, you get a fancy, like, map thing, which I haven't seen in forever.
That's sick. Oh,
I wish they wouldn't fold shit, you know?
I wish it was just cloth.
But the
that would be plus plus.
The town of Oxenflirt or whatever.
Oxenflirt.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah, to the northeast.
Awesome. It's just straight east. It's like the eastern. Anyway, System Mabel says that seems to be more of a town that is like preparing for war.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not much happening. There's not much popping up. I think Squiddle's.
Oh, it's Novigrad. That's where I went. Yeah. It's Novigrad. That is where I went. Yes. And I went into the first. I went in there for the Bloody Baron part,
the Witch Hunters,
and then I walked out of there very quickly.
Yeah. When you actually spend time there, like Novigrad, actually in terms of quests,
I don't remember ever going there for the Bloody Baron.
Well, it depends what you choose, dude.
I guess that's correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Like that's why we can talk about a lot of it. It is so essentially you go there and that area, Novigrad, actually spans from level 12 or so all the way up to level 24.
I did feel so much. I should be scaling buildings when I walked in there. Like I really did
want to. It felt like Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, I totally wanted to do that and like just jump around and I don't know.
Yeah. And when you actually like really delve into that city, when you spend more time in that city, you realize how many like side nooks and crannies there are in the city, how dense the city is, how many of those buildings you actually go into. Because at some point you get, when you find, every now and then a merchant has a map, always buy those maps because they lead you to Witcher items.
Yes.
So that's the green upgradable items. So I'm focusing on the cat school, which is the light weapons and extra percent damage school. As opposed to the Griffin, which is sign intensity and sign regeneration, or the bear, which is the coolest looking by far, and that's the damage reduction school.
I was tempted to go get that anvil that they had alluded to, and then I realized how high a level that was, and I was like, okay, I can't do that quite yet.
There's a reason why it's masterwork armor. I will say something like an issue with Novigrad that I'm curious if you guys had this as well, but I found myself when I was traveling from one end to the next in the city, just like only looking at the mini map.
A big issue with this game, in that like because it's a problem that Assassin's Creed had as well, because when you have a game with such a dense city, the player problem stops being let's just go from A to B in a straight line and look at all the pretty shit along the way because you have time to just look out as the horse is auto running. It goes to being, I need to navigate these side streets to get to the place I'm going, and the only real way to do that is to just look at the minimap because that shows you a dotted line leading you to your destination.
It shows you the most efficient route from A to B on the point.
And you end up following it. I kind of wish that they expanded the horse here, like GTA 5.
Red Dead Redemption?
Red Dead Redemption and LA Noire is what I was thinking of, where you can say, get a new horse, tell it to go to the quest. So you can actually spend that time looking at the city and looking around, because there is, when you get to, as I was saying, the Witcher quests, it gets to this point where you're actually searching through Novigrad in a couple of different places and looking for these items, these boxes of items, and you actually really see it. The point was, so I finally got to Skellige, which is the third area, and it seems to me like they spent all, like, a good half of their time on Skellige.
How does it compare both in size and, I guess, in travelable landmass to, like, the other two zones?
So Skellige is actually more like Assassin's Creed's Black Flag, in that there's a main landmass, which is about the size of half of the Novigrad, that kind of area. So like Novigrad, Velen, I'm counting as one big area, because it is one big area. The main island's about half that size. But around that main island is a shitload of saw islands that you have to like ride boats to in many cases, because they don't have those signposts you can teleport to. Like it's so big that the first town you get to in Skellige, there's merchants that sell you these maps that unlock fast travel points on little islands and other places. Just because they knew that people would just get lost. But just in terms of like, not in terms of like the size though, but in terms of just the sheer beauty of the area. Like the music you hear when you get to Skellige is its own, like all the areas have their own background music, but you know, I didn't really notice it till I got to Skellige, because that song was just gorgeous. Like it forces you to get there around sunset by plot reasons. And, you're just riding through. Essentially, it looks a lot like Skyrim. You're looking at like these massive mountain peaks in the distance that you can get to if you want to, that ice capped and so on. But because of the density of the foliage that you just see, and like the realism of everything, like Skellige is just next level gorgeous. Like I think that The Witcher 3 is probably the best looking game out there. Factoring in the reductions you have to take into fact that it's an open world. Like it doesn't, IQ wise, it doesn't look as good as The Order, for example, 1886. But just overall, good looking game. Best.
And considering best that, like the way the loading, like the loading of it works, like you don't, apart from like loading the initial zone, there's no loading times.
Exactly, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Anyway, that's our Witcher 3 part. Anything else? You know about Witcher 3, Squiddle, Thurbleton?
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Cool. That's another 20 minutes this week. We probably shouldn't talk about next Fortnite, but we probably will. Anyway. So
Fortnite, we're getting into.
I'm Australian.
Oh, yeah, I do want to say one thing before we go on. Fuck that horse. That lazy, good-for-nothing piece of shit.
What, Roach?
Yes.
Oh, it stops like 20 meters from you. Like, well, come on.
I will call that thing, and it's in the middle of the road, and it won't step off the road to come right to me. I have to go. And half the time, I just want to hit it with an axe or a sword or a piece of wood.
I love because you look in his direction and wonder what the fuck's holding up. He's just eating. I mean, he's just fucking eating grass.
Half the time, you just abandon it everywhere, so it doesn't give a crap.
Well,
it's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah. Hey, here we go.
Speaking of things that aren't The Witcher, Nubarama.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Well, hi. I actually played a little bit of The Witcher.
Oh, nice.
Well, like, it started off bad because it installed itself on my SSD, even though Your Old Games was on a completely other different drive. So
that's just kind of fucking, way you should be installing it, honestly.
I have a small SSD, so I had like 20 gigs free of hard drive space.
Oh, I see.
It stepped on my toes to begin with, and I played the game for like 20 minutes, and I'm burned out from fantasy games. I think that's I think like maybe in the next couple, maybe 5 to 10 years, I think I can get around to enjoying the game. But currently, like, I'm just burned out from all, like, I'm still recovering over Dragon Age Inquisition, to be honest. I haven't even finished that game. Like,
oh, you haven't?
Yeah. Okay. No. I got it. I pre-ordered it, too, and I never finished it. So, yeah.
It's definitely one of those things where I still, like, even 60 or so hours into Witcher, I'm still not at the point where I'm like, whoa, 10 out of 10, everyone should play this, whatever. I think it's a fantastic game. It's probably going to be in my top 3 for Game of the Year, looking at what released this year, notwithstanding some of the announcements we'll talk about later in the show. I can see why someone.
I think the nice thing about it, because it's like a single player experience, it's like as long as like even spoilers generally don't ruin. I usually ruin the game with spoilers by myself by going and searching for it. So it's like I'm not too worried about that. It's sort of like the nice thing is that because it's a single player game, I don't really have to wait on people. Or, like, have to, like, jump in now while people are still playing to enjoy it. So I guess, like, you know, I can play it on my own pace, which is very good. Especially for a game that requires such a big time commitment.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to.
Like,
oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I guess the biggest thing for me that's preventing me from going back to Dragon Age is, like, it's the kind of thing where I haven't played for so long where, like, I kind of want to restart. But I also don't want to play 60 hours, which that's where I left off. So it's that kind of thing. It's like I really have to do it all at once.
If I would have had a job when The Witcher 3 came out, I would not have played as much as I had. But
you're
in
a good spot to play Witcher. You're the perfect spot to play Witcher
3. But I took an entire day, 12 hours, and just played it straight.
And then
I was like, okay, I gotta go to bed. I gotta get some sleep.
And that's how I fucked up this game is because he's played for 12 hours straight, right? That's mostly mainlining it. And he's at level 7. Yeah. And some of my quests are like level 37. And I'm like, oh God. I'm at level 20, 60 hours in. And I have a bunch of quests at level 33. And I know it's going to take me like a good fucking another 10, 15, 30 hours to get to those. And it's like, all right. Anyway. So what have you been doing?
I got Grand Theft Auto V finally. So I've been playing a lot of Grand Theft Auto V. Very, very good game. I'm playing mostly the heists on GTA Online. Those are super, super fun, especially if you got a group of people you can voice chat with. Pubs.
Okay, so how does that work out on PC? Like, is it cool inbuilt voice chat and stuff? Or?
There's infield voice chat. The voice chat in that game is weird because I always presumed that they would probably implement something like within the area or within the instance. But like literally, if you go on GTA Online, you can just hear people across the map on the other side of the city, and they're most often not speaking English, and they're very, very aggressive. So I've stuck to playing private matches with my friends because, you know, I don't want to be run over by a car for no reason, which actually tends to happen even more when you're playing with friends.
So with the friends, what are you doing? Are you doing like the actual...
Oh, yeah, we're doing with the gaming hub. So we're doing heists, which are essentially like if you play Payday or something like that, you'll get, you know, it's like a very... elaborate setups and the pulling off mission with different roles. It's really well done. There's only 5, which is unfortunate. Each one's quite long. But the thing is, I think Rockstar went out and said, like, yeah, I think they either said they're not making one anymore at all, or it's going to be a lot far ahead, more of them. But yeah, Grand Theft Auto V is fantastic. I wouldn't recommend people getting it on PC.
Really?
I mean, if they already own it on, like, Xbox
One. Oh, right.
Or, like, I don't think online itself justifies it. Because there's been like a second sort of wind. A lot of people have bought it again on PC.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, only if you have, like, if you only have friends playing games on PC, like, only then would I recommend it. Because it is like 40 hours alone of just content. That's because other than heist, there's fuck all to do in that game. I mean, you can run around robbing like liquor stores, but that's not like that's you just do that.
I mean, the open world stuff does have some interesting things. Like there will just be like I've been running around solo on online as well, and they're just like, hey, we're just having a dozen people driving around in a bus on a tour.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like you can do a lot of makeshift games where, like, I guess one thing we did is I strapped my car up with a bunch of satchel charges, and then I tried to explode it near one of my friends, and that was like a little mini game over like in a small enclosed graveyard. So I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can do if you use your imagination, but if you're not like autistic, it'd be very difficult to find things to do.
I mean, well, also, like, the mini games, I'm not sure if the console versions have this functionality as well, but, like, I've been playing with the Idle Thumbs whenever they do meetups. Well, I was not aware PC Gaming Hub was doing some. Yeah, I didn't have notifications. But...
Oh, no. It's, like, within, like, it's, like, four people. We don't actually have, like, events.
Okay. Well, it's like, if you do have a group of friends, you can make player, like, there have been player-made races. Where one of them, I kid you not, was just like a bunch of shipping container crates floating in the sky with like planks of wood, so, like assigning them, and it was just like, all right, now drive your motorcycle like along this path and have fun falling to your death constantly.
That's cool. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of cool game modes, but like, I'm really enjoying it. I dumped 50 hours in like the first 75 hours of me playing, like buying the game. So like I think I burnt out with this again. Like I all played so much at the beginning, it's like, oh, okay. So I've mostly been playing this this week. I've gone back to SWTOR.
Have you done any of the single player stuff, or are you just strictly multiplayer?
Oh, I've been playing a bit of the single player stuff, but again, like I hit like a brick wall. It's like I was having way more fun with the heists, and then just to go back to the single player felt a bit slow. So yeah, in preparation of playing a game set in a desolate wasteland with no other people, I've been playing a lot of SWTOR. There is fuck all. Like they're at a point where if you're a subscriber, you get 12 times XP for all of the story quests until like fall of this year. And it's like they took out the cooldown on quick travel because there used to be like a 45-minute cooldown. They consolidated. I mean, it's not unpopulated. Don't get me wrong. Like the servers have shit tons of people. Yeah, servers have shit tons of people, but it's like, yeah, they're slowly implementing really interesting story content around like the Emperor and stuff. But I mean, it is very, when they say slowly implementing, it is very glacial in terms of the pace. But yeah, so I've just been pissing money on cosmetic items.
I thought you would have started a new character to see a new single
player. No. I've been power leveling characters with a times 12. Like the idea is like, they're only for class missions, so because this game is so story oriented, or at least it was before like the expansions, they're really encouraging you to just like start a character just for the story, and that's essentially
actually,
what I've been doing.
I'd actually say this is the best time to play.
Oh yeah, if you want, you have to be a subscriber to enjoy the effects.
12
again,
XP,
like,
yeah.
But just I honestly, this is not a free to play game. This is you subscribe and then you pay even more money. It's $15 US. It's just a regular subscription. It's
a month.
A month, yeah.
A month.
That's average for.
I know, but it's SWTOR. It's not WoW.
I mean, look what they're doing with fucking Elder Scrolls Online. SWTOR can charge whatever it wants. Considering the competition, it's not. It's like their competition is fucking ESO and. That's about it.
I don't know if I could pay $15 a month or so for.
Well, I'm doing it mostly because like I don't really have anything. It's a great time sink. If you're bored as fuck like me, and it's like it's this.
Wait. If you're bored as fuck, the person who doesn't want to consistently play a game that has that's 100 and something hours but you'll waste time in SWTOR.
But the thing about SWTOR, it's mindless. It's like, but I'm also really enjoying the story for all of them. Like, I think the nice thing is, like, the best thing I can say about the story is, like, even, like, the worst, like, the Jedi Counselor, like, that's a shit story, but it's a solid story, right? It's not, like, even among the classes, like, although there's a little bit of variation on the quality, even the lowest rung is still an excellent story. So, like, even, I mean, it's not what they said, which is like KOTOR 1 to 10 or KOTOR 3 to 10. Like, it's not that. That's like, no, it's not at all. But it's, it's, if you like Star Wars, if you just like, you know, like if you like the franchise and things like that, it is a good way to sink time. And if you're like me, money, a shit ton of money. Like, if you play these games, never like tie your credit card so it's like you can buy things from inside the game. That's the mistake I made, where it's like I just press the button to pay $10 for a bunch of imaginary coins. That's a fucking mistake. Make it so you actually have to log into their website to buy that. Because I figured out I've spent a little over $300 in the last
year. Oh my god.
On excluding subscription, just on the coins. Just on the coins. My inventory on my main character, I don't have a single slot open on my bank because it's filled with just the vanity items. It's fucked. Yeah, I'm fucked. I'm totally fucked.
You're an idiot.
Yeah.
All right. That's everyone. Is it, anyone else have anything else that they want to talk about before we get to me? No?
In terms of games, so, no.
So for people at home, they don't know, we are streaming to each other via Skype video. And the reason we are doing that is because the one and only myself, Cynic,
because
finally has internet.
It's a celebration. Not only internet, you have quality internet.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, holy shit. Australians can apparently get quality internet if you A, live in the right place, and B, are willing to shell out quite a bit for it. I'm on, finally, for people living in the good old Australia, on NBN, which is our fiber to the home / fiber to the premises network. It's pretty fucking sick.
Is that exclusive to Guntown?
Yeah, it's Guntown only. Well, unconfirmed if places in Boston have that ability. But yeah, at the moment, it's pretty fucking fantastic. So, along with like my good internet, I also have finally gotten the subscription to Netflix, which is apparently finally in Australia / I only really can get it now since I can finally stream video.
Yeah, I guess another question for you then, with like typically with Australian internet, at least historically with what you've had, you're capped at like 20 gigs.
For
streaming in video, I assume that's taking a fair amount of bandwidth in the long term.
Exactly. Yeah. So, all right. So previously I was living on a military base and I was on wireless internet, which was ridiculously expensive. But before that I was on normal ADSL 2+, 25 down, 1.5 up, unlimited on internet. So no download cap. I had an option to go with a company that would have offered unlimited downloads, but they have terrible customer service and I really need that. So I'm on a 600 gig, on peak, 12 terabyte off peak. So I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right in terms of down, and Netflix is unmetered for us as well.
Oh, really?
So,
wow.
So it's nice. Yeah.
Wow. Is Australian Netflix like all of the violent shows are banned and it's just Neighbours? Is that it? Or is it like mostly available?
I can't tell what's the difference at the moment. Like, I know that we are missing some of your shows, but in terms of like the ones you want, like House of Cards, Daredevil, that we've got.
I also recently, like, I've had Netflix in the past, but like this week I also re-upped Netflix for the first time in like years. What have you started watching? I'm curious.
So I watched the complete run of Daredevil, and it is pretty great. Like, I was surprised at how okay that show was. Like,
how okay? Just came off.
It is the violence that I want to see in more, more comic book shows.
Yeah, it is okay. Daredevil is essentially, hey, what if we made Batman but Marvel? That's what it ended up as. Like, he even does the gruff voice, where is she? He does that during the fucking season. Like, but unlike most Marvel shit, but like, again, DC, the villain in this is actually has depth. He's an actual bad dude who has reasons for being bad other than, hey, I just want to take over the world. It actually, in terms of writing, it's pretty up there. For,
so it's like
for
Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man, bad dude.
God, it's so goddamn terrible. Hey, what are you talking about? The new Spider-Man's also fucking terrible.
Yeah. Amazing Spider-Man. He's amazing.
It's not as bad because, yes, while it is cheesy and dorky, it's cheesy and dorky because they go for a more snark level than evil level.
Well, yeah, I think that – so, like, Amazing Spider-Man, it's more acceptable because, like, the feel of the show is a lot more lighthearted. But, like, mm-hmm. Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, it's supposed to be dark, but it's also shit. So it's, like, it doesn't
– Well, Spider-Man 2 was excellent. I will defend that movie to the end.
I have not seen
the new guy.
No. The old guy.
Yeah,
the old Spider-Man 2.
I really liked the new guy in the first one that he did. I didn't watch the second one because I couldn't stand the Electro or whatever the character.
Oh, God. Well, that's fair enough. You know what? Okay. He was fucking terrible. But I like some of the directions that movie went in, but the villains were fucking garbage. So, it's the Thurbs, what have you been watching?
I pretty much the first thing I watched and has been the main thing I've marathoned. I've watched a couple other things, but X-Files.
Oh, nice. Wow, really? Yes. I have a few friends watching X-Files all of a sudden, and I'm wondering, is there a reason there's X-Files boom?
I mean, like, okay, here, the genesis of it is, I think I've mentioned the Nerdist podcast, in the past, mm-hmm. but, Gillian Anderson, Agent Scully, the actress who plays Agent Scully, went on their podcast, like, this is months ago. But then, like, the question got raised, is like, hey, have you thought about, like, do any of the cast want to, like, David Duchovny, like, want to redo that? And everyone's like, yeah, we'd love to. And so then...
They are, aren't they?
Yes, that's the thing. It's like, the people who run the podcast is like, all right, let's start a Twitter, like, hashtag nice. Thing. And it got trending enough that, everyone was like, all right, let's try starting up X-Files again. And I think part of it was like to judge people who are not on Twitter and aware of like what is a trending hashtag. They put it on Netflix to see what the interest was like, and freaking everyone loves X-Files.
Yeah, it's fucking X-Files, man. That's some classic 90s. That's some shit.
The other things I've been
still
watching.
Veronica Mars,
I guess. Yeah, that's true. I've been watching a ton of Veronica. No,
I'm stuck laughing.
So.
There's nobody.
This is really dumb, but it's just like it's a quality show. I have watched a couple episodes of Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Nice.
Yeah, which is also on Netflix. The Science Guy. Bill
so that we don't have. We don't have X-Files or Bill Nye now.
Oh man.
So it's just Neighbors for you.
I am genuinely sad.
You don't
about
have Neighbors
that.
On there either.
You don't have Neighbors on your on Australian Netflix?
No, I'm pretty sure we do.
Christ.
Doing it now.
The other two things I'd recommend people watch are two documentaries. One by it's I Know That Voice by the it's championed by the guy
in
who does,
the world.
Yeah, it's championed by the guy who does the voice of Bender and Jake the Dog.
Okay.
DiMaggio, John DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah, and it's just a documentary all about voice acting, and it walks the range from beginnings in Steamboat Willie. To modern day animation and all the way into video games, and nice. not Troy Baker. Who's the other one?
Nolan
North. Yeah, Nolan North has some like he has a bit of screen time and input on that documentary as well. And the other one I've talked
about have anime. I really love anime.
I think they briefly gloss over anime and just the challenge of like for American animation, it's more recordings before the animation set,
right.
And for anime, it's obviously after the animation set. So,
yeah.
The challenges of that. The other documentary I've talked about before is Stripped, which is also available on Netflix. I'm not sure if it's Australian Netflix, but it talks about just like newspaper comics and how newspaper comics are falling or going under because newspapers are going under. And the rise of internet web comics and just
we need to put these in the plugs. Like these sound great.
Yeah.
What was the first one called again? Just for
I Know That Voice.
I Know That Voice. Nice.
Yeah.
So got new internet, got that, played Witcher. Aside from that, not much on my end, honestly.
No
so
books.
I guess
well,
I haven't.
There's the last thing I did that wasn't game related.
Shoot.
I built a shelf.
Oh, IKEA
nice.
Shelf or build your own shelf.
I built
DIY.
My own shelf. DIY.
Damn, son.
It stands on its own, but it, like you can tell, it's like not level at parts. It kind of wobbles a little bit.
Jeez.
But it was like half the cost of that same size, but like buying some prefabricated thing. And it was just a nice afternoon of like sawing a bunch of 2x4s and drilling it all together. Yeah.
Are you going to shellac it next? Or?
I have no woodworking experience.
If only you knew you were living a Portlandia sketch. If only.
Oh, God.
You are.
God.
If any of us could have been, it was always going to be Thurb.
Well, of course. Well, he not only does he actually live in the city, but he seems to just on his own live the portrayal. Because there's one episode where it's just about a dude who makes his own stuff.
I mean, like...
The question is, Thurbleton, are you going to go back to it and fix what you did wrong?
Probably. The main goal was, as you guys can see on the webcam, there's a bunch of empty space behind me. I'm trying to clear out my room, and in order to do that, some of the stuff like desks and furniture and whatnot needs to go down to the garage. The garage is just a sea of cardboard boxes that are my roommates. And so it was immediately just like to get the shelf build, put all of her like junk up on the shelf, and then have room for my stuff. So I'm just adding to the pile.
That's perfect.
You know, from what I've seen, you could just send all your crap to giantbomb.com. They see,
they'll take it off your hands. Yeah.
Oh man,
it's Box just City, they're like a know. Storage facility now.
It's gonna happen. They're gonna have another Box City.
Quickly plug a book. Can I quickly
go ahead?
There's this interesting book called China Second Continent, and it's like. About like people, there's news about people like, oh, China's investing a lot in Africa. But this is really interesting because it's just talking about over a million Chinese just immigrating to live in Africa, live and work in Africa.
This is something I'm super interested about.
Yeah. It's really interesting because you get the perception that because it's such a business oriented, you would expect it to be business oriented, you know, people working as business interlockers and stuff like that. But it's literally stories of people going in and starting farms, like building their. You know, starting as just like traders, like, you know, selling watches on the street and then ending up building these giant companies. And it's so reminiscent of reading books from like the mid 1800s, like to the point where it's like almost, you know, Joseph Conrad, Heart of Darkness. Of it's like, this is like colonialization or colonization in like the most basic form, but it's so very, very interesting. And it's like, it's a very readable book. It's not super political science-y or academic in its prose. So I super recommend it. China Second Continent. And it's like over a million Chinese. And it's just, the first story is just a dude whose business ventures in China failed. So he just bought a plot of land and then worked his ass off building a farm by himself. It's crazy. That's
really fucking crazy. And then,
Author of that?
Howard French.
China Second Continent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very, very. It's a very short book too, but I recommend it. It's like outside of like political, just there are very fascinating stories of, you know, like very entrepreneurial. People are leaving their lives behind to start just farming in the middle of Mozambique, and people do that. It's crazy. Yeah.
Oh man, if you want to be plugging books here, after reading the first one and being not very impressed, the prequel to the first Witcher book.
The prequel to the first Witcher book, not the actual.
So the Witcher is like a trilogy, kind of. Not it's got five parts to it, but only three are translated at the moment. So by Andrzej Sapkowski?
Sapkowski.
And I have no idea how to pronounce it. Sorry, what was that, Thurbleton?
I said, what's up, Kowalski, because of the way you pronounce the guy's name.
It's called The Last Wish. It's the prequel. So, like, the actual series is about Geralt, Ciri, and Yennefer. But the prequel is essentially just a series of short stories about the life of a Witcher. And it is far closer to what you actually experience in the games. And it is excellent. All the vignettes are actually really nice.
I have a question, and I know we're trying to get away from this. Talk about the Witcher. But if it's not a spoiler, I'm confused on how Ciri is related to Geralt. but yet somehow related to the other king.
Adopted daughter.
Okay.
The king is the biological daughter. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, okay. So she's the granddaughter of a dead queen. To the point where she was supposed to take over for the dead queen. I forget what the fuck there. It starts with C, but I forget what the fuck that that country was called. And that country was taken over by a bunch of other these four other kings slash monarchs are like in concert with each other, and there's all this political shit that goes on. The point is, Ciri was really important for that because she's essentially an heir who can potentially challenge that throne later. So they try to track her down and shit. That's the first book of The Witcher. The first scene is Geralt literally bringing Ciri to
Dunmodor or something. Kaer Morhen.
So he brings her and he says like she's our future. It's because she's like there's like this prophecy of like her being linked to Geralt and like all this kind of shit. She's his adopted daughter, but it's kind of the other way around. She takes him and Yennefer as her adopted parents. But she does so separately because Geralt and Yennefer's relationship has always been fucking weird and rocky, especially with Triss and how she like in the book she like casts like mind manipulation magic on him to have him fuck her. So essentially like it's all sideways. Like in the games he loses his memory and then he gets with her. In the books it's like way darker. But she's still friends with Yennefer, but they have their problems. So there's like this whole thing.
Okay.
But The Last Witch, The Last Wish, which is the prequel to that, is just a series of vignettes about The Witcher. And that is like way, way good. Really fantastic. Each vignette is like really, it's loosely based on modern, like our folklore, like today's folklore, which is also in this world's folklore. So you have Hansel and Gretel and all that kind of stuff. But it's that with The Witcher in the primary point. And it's actually really nice. So,
okay. That gives me a little bit more understanding on kind of what's
going on. So with that, we're going to take a short break and after that come back with the news. So thanks for listening. We'll be right back. And we're back with the news.
There's a lot of them.
Let's start with the obvious big hitter here.
XCOM 2.
New Elder Scrolls game.
Yep.
Yay. Oh my god. Oh, if there was a new Elder Scrolls game announced,
I would be
this week.
So fucking pissed. If that was their announcement, I would have probably shat my pants.
So
like, oh, fuck you. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you.
What if you could play Elder Scrolls?
I love how we all picked a different piece of fake news to shout.
Mine was real.
What was yours?
XCOM 2.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
but
the
for me.
The realest of news.
Well, actually, my news was real as well. Austin Walker has joined Giant Bomb. We have a new guy in the family. It's fucking cool.
I didn't know who he was, but he seems like a pretty cool, pretty really deeply opinionated dude. And I like the
you
way.
Think he knows what a mortgage is?
I love his rant with Dan on Twitter, and I was reading it, and I was just like, stop.
I haven't read this. What's this?
You need to fuck.
No. That sounds great.
What are they fucking arguing about? Oh, how that since Dan said something was horrible, either he shouldn't say it's horrible, he doesn't like it, because people believe that when he says it's horrible, they're taking his opinion and making it like
angry. Right.
You know, and it was just this great little thing. And Brad had to come in and say, just stop. Just don't even feed the fire. just stop this right now.
So
it's not worth it.
I knew about Austin Walker, but like I knew about him literally like less than a month before he joined.
Nice.
There
I've
is
never heard of him. And I'm not alone. Like, most people had not heard of it.
I think they made mention of it with the video that was just like of Alex introducing him, of just like the shot of him at his desk. But he is part of a group that I think was started by Phil Kohler of Polygon that is just a bunch of random, like, not, there's not like a straight line of how these people are connected, other than, I guess, just being internet friends, called Stream Friends, where they, right. like, it's basically they will all stream at various times to the same stream channel.
Right.
And I guess that's, like, I'm trying to, like, explain what it is they do.
They play video games, I assume.
Yeah, like, they kind of do something similar along the Quick Look format, so it's extended playthroughs, like, Let's Plays of things.
Right.
And, like, there's reoccurring things, like Phil Kohler will try and do a mission in Payday once every couple months and fail horribly, and it's hilarious. But, yeah, it's that, like, I knew about Austin from that, and then it was like, oh, it's, like, all these people seem pretty cool, and then just suddenly he's working a giant bomb. I'm like, what?
I actually really appreciate his writing style. He's got a fantastic way of being both informative and entertaining.
Oh, does he actually make content? That'd be pretty interesting.
His first post was of the announcement of XCOM 2.
Which is fucking great. Speaking of which, XCOM 2 was announced. How awesome is that?
That is so awesome.
I guess, sure. It's no Xenonauts, oh my God. I'll tell you that.
Now earlier,
I was so happy to see that.
Earlier, Swiddle, before recording, just asked the question, what's XCOM? And I don't know what he said after that, because I did have to leave the call out of rage.
Oh, man. I don't know. I never got behind the XCOM fascination, I guess.
XCOM had some serious problems. It had some really big, shitty ways about doing math and line of sight and a couple of other things. But it was a pretty great game, even in spite of that. And the fact that it won Giant Bomb's Game of the Year.
I mean, visually, it's great. I guess my thing is I'm not a turn-based shooter type person. That's not the thing that really pulls me. But visually, it looked fascinating. And it's fun to watch people play it. I enjoy that, I will say.
So I guess this will be a me and Thurb conversation. Thurbleton.
Yes.
What was your reaction to XCOM 2?
Just like glee over like the welcome back commander thing from the trailer. But yeah, it's just I really enjoyed it. I have been looking for some time and like compiling a list of people's names for a Long War playthrough, which anybody should know, it's XCOM Enemy Unknown, Enemy Within. Like it turns that already crazy scale that Enemy Within adds like up to like 15 when it previously was at 11. And the decision for them to make it at least initially PC exclusive to add mod support led me think that, like, okay, they really enjoyed Long War mod and want to like work with the community and mod makers for the next game. So that alone is like sweet.
That is a massive takeaway, though. The fact that it's PC only says a lot about where they're going.
PC initially. I wouldn't be surprised if they make any announcements.
The last one's on iPad for fuck's sake. Yeah. Like it's going to get elsewhere.
And that's just it. Like it did really well on iPad, but did not do, from what people have said, initially at least, really well on Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, XCOM fans, PC gamers.
That's where the history of the franchise lies, obviously.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, obviously.
But I mean, like,
Enemy Unknown. Yeah.
Just ignoring the platform history. It like plays pretty awesomely with a controller.
Yeah, yeah. I if it wasn't for me, it was the speed at which the controller moved shit around. I would use a controller for that.
Yeah, the speed was tough, but in terms of just like everything else, everything else like you would think that would be a hindrance for managing the UI and just like interfacing with it. Was pretty seamless, like with the controller. They just tried to get a very minimalist look of just like what you need to do to make it easier for a controller.
Yeah, like just straight up, like paying keyboard and mouse, like it didn't feel like that much of a difference / advantage over playing controller. It was literally just that speed thing. Otherwise, I would have just played controller because it lets you play on your TV instead of more easily. But B, it just worked, and they did really good work on their interface in general. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they have a quick throughput from going from their PC initial stages to console later. I bet that you're right. That'll probably be a reveal at someone's press conference this year that is going to be coming to them after PC, if I was to guess. But my big takeaway was fucking, A, it's this year. It wasn't the fucking, oh yeah, we're having this trailer for XCOM, which is coming in like fucking 4 years and maybe delayed after that. It is like literally this fucking holiday, goddamn XCOM's coming. Get ready. That was sick. I was overly excited about that.
The other thing was just like the, oh hey, humanity. Well, I kind of like how
we
many,
lost.
How the fuck?
I'm so angry. I tried hard to win my goddamn campaign. Thank you very much. Like the whole, like the, I know it's interesting that you're playing like fucking rebels, and that's a really nice like way to frame narratively the next game. But come on,
I kind of like how they, rather than answering any questions, they just at like they took what everyone assumed and just made more questions out of that. So it was the, like thing of like, oh. Like, humanity could have lost either with either ending, because with the good ending, the bad leader just says like, okay, this is spoilers for a game that came out like 3 years ago, and it is kind of, it's not that much of a spoiler because it's what every bad guy would say of just like, if you kill me, there's going to be like 50 more behind me. We're the test group, we're the recon force that is just seeing if humanity is worth it, and
yeah.
Turns out we are, and so aliens coming for
us. We won, guys. We won. See, we won.
Yay.
So it's just like, with either way, they could play out how it is. And actually, I don't know if you know this. I assume you ended up being in the game, right, Cynic?
Yeah.
The ending. You like just, there's a big.
I'm trying to remember what it was. Honestly, I played that game way more for the gameplay than the story.
Basically, it tells a story like the. The, one of your heroes or one of your squad mates that is a psychic.
Psionic, like
you need one psionic to be on your crew for the final mission, I think, is like the requirement.
Yeah.
He is known as the volunteer, he or she. And they, in the final cutscene, they're like the, upon killing the enemy overlord, advisor, I think is their name, will like cause a black hole to happen over Earth. And he makes the black hole in the ship go elsewhere or disappear some way. But this was revealed like a couple months ago, just out of the blue, everyone thought. Jake Sullivan posted on Twitter that the volunteer disappears a frame before the explosion and the ship disappears. Huh. So now it's like, well, it's like, does the volunteer, like, is he the new bad guy? Is he the new good guy? Is he going to play a role at all in the next expansion? And that will kind of, or in the next game, that will kind of say whether or not humanity won or lost the original game, I feel.
Right. Huh. That's actually really interesting. The reason I am dislike the fact that humanity lost, A, because, yeah, I fought through that fucking game.
Yes.
But
tears were shed.
Yeah, but more importantly, I would really have liked it to get off Earth. Now, noted, Earth is way different in this game. Like, there's different... Like before, it was definitely like, hey, this is the 1940s, 1960s, whatever, Earth with these aliens in there. But now it seems like this futuristic kind of Earth, because we've had these alien overlords, our gracious overlords, come down and give us all this wonderful technology, et cetera, / and save us at the same time. So it is different, but I would have preferred there to be like really, really crazy different kind of worlds that you visit. Like I wanted it to be humanity going, you know what, now fuck you, we're going to take you on and taking the fight to them.
I wouldn't be surprised, like I would not be surprised and would kind of enjoy the fact that if like, the since it's a coalition or it's a collection of alien races with like a master race pulling all the strings, I wouldn't be surprised if there were some guerrilla aliens that you team up with, Vortigaunt style from Half-Life 2, that then like maybe the expansion is you go to their planet. And so like they could definitely set up the potential for a third or an expansion or something to being on another place.
I have no problem with that. Like there's so few games like XCOM that if they do a bunch of sequels, I won't mind at all.
The robot thing, I from, I think IGN did a like deep dive with Jake Solomon and one of the other head designers. I can't remember his name. But it basically said that like in the trailer, there's a little robot dude that helps out as well. He is paired up with a human player.
Oh, he's like, it's not, like a not, class. That
yeah,
that
like a soldier that is like an engineer that is paired up with a robot. So I think that's going to be a neat thing where before you had to choose whether or not it's exclusively I'm sending out a drone or a soldier, now you get the best of both worlds.
That'd be cool. And obviously, that they made, I, even though I didn't play, I didn't actually end up playing what's the space, the expansion. I would bet that I bet that we'd have a lot of that.
That's
stuff
the thing.
Coming
I feel like we're making a step down, going to like a dude with a sword, when previously you had a giant robot man who could just punch. He would punch a guy so like so hard and so fast, he just like made a hole in a wall. That was a thing you could do in an enemy unknown.
That said, though. Swords are fucking cool, and that was sick.
That was pretty cool. That was great.
Whatever. But I guess the what people would claim to be the actual biggest news of the week, Nubarama.
Oh, Fallout 4! No, no.
See, that's the tune you were going for. Yeah, the Star Wars.
No, no, no. It's like, you know, when like the vault's opening, it's like the low, deep, like,
Speaking of which, I want to confirm the way that you say vault 111 is 111. That is the correct way that you will have to pronounce it.
Not 111?
No, 111.
Okay.
Yeah, that's gonna be a canon right there.
Thank you. Thank you for placing that at the start. So from now on, that will just be called 111.
Did you guys see this coming pre-E3?
Of course. Yes. I saw this come. Well, like, I think everyone was sure that when Bethesda announced their, you know, they're doing an E3 showcase, it was obviously going to be either one of their big two franchises.
It was
going to
be Fallout 4 because it just did Skyrim.
It wasn't going to be Elder Scrolls. Yeah, it's two. Yeah. It's two.
Skyrim 2 now with all.
I don't think Doom by itself merits its own showcase.
God knows.
And I think like Fallout is just what people were waiting for. Like there was a hoax in like during the Spike VGA or not the Spike VGAs. Now it's called just the Video Game Awards or something. Yeah. Where it's like,
really
there's
good.
A countdown timer. They're okay, yeah, but it's like people thought it was going to happen, and because they got Imagine Dragons, and Imagine Dragons had that song Radioactive, I'm like, oh, could it be? But it wasn't. But now we have it. Now we have the trailer. The trailer's out on the YouTubes.
Yeah.
There was a countdown website. Now
you can give you the warm fuzzies.
Oh, the trailer gave me mixed feelings. I'm excited for the game, but the trailer is like, oh, okay. Oh.
Yeah, they're doing something different.
So there's a shit ton of speculation in the game because in the lead up, in the last couple of years, there have been a lot of like quote unquote leaks, like a lot of false speculation, like starting with like leaks of a script for the game. Someone posted on Reddit saying they were like a fired employee for doing a leak and then posted all this information about what the state of the Fallout game is and stuff like that. And I think like – so let me just go through – so somebody on Reddit posted – I'll link this for later. Let me just figure it out actually. Reddit Fallout 4 link, I think, leak. I think if you Google that, you'll be able to find it. Yeah. So essentially they said they used to work on Fallout 4 before they got fired. And so they described correctly, you know, it was said in Boston. But the thing is, you know, the speculation had already said, oh, it's going to be Boston. So the new Fallout is going to be set in the Boston area. If anybody knows the lore in Fallout 3, there was a mission where there was like a robot who was also a person robot. What do you call those things? Cyborgs, maybe? Human cyborg men? And then, well, there's this thing called the Institute that's super technologically advanced based out of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, hence the name. And essentially this New England area is supposed to be, you know, one of the most well-preserved areas after the horrible nuclear fallout a century before. And so it's a very interesting setting. But of course, the controversial things said in the post, the Reddit fake leak, was that the game, you could only play it as a male protagonist.
Yeah. Whoa.
But the thing is, like, it's difficult to imagine a Bethesda game where they force you to play. So people were like, oh, probably not. And then they went and said, oh, it's going to be coming out on the Xbox 360 and PS3 long after it comes out on the new next-gen platforms, which doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. No, and like, you know, Todd Howard personally had said, you know, the old generations of things are dead. So if you run into something like that, take it with a grain of salt, because there's a lot of rampant speculation about it. Mm. I think currently the biggest hubbub on the internet is that the game looks like shit.
That's what people are saying.
I would not be surprised if a game
of that size, it still hasn't been optimized much.
I mean, well, like, I think the specific things that they pointed out was the foliage in the game. It looks like Fallout 3 foliage, and it looks Gamebryo-y as fuck. Like, that's a Gamebryo game, which isn't that surprising, because it sort of went into development on the same track as Skyrim, and sort of. So it's difficult to imagine that they would have made a new engine for it. And the other thing is, they saw there's like a screenshot of a picture of a hand while they're touching the dog near the end of the trailer, right? And it looks like a Barbie plastic doll robot, like a G.I. Joe action figure hand, and it looks fucking awful. So, like, that's the primary complaint that the internet seems to be having. Yeah.
I mean, doesn't Bethesda own the Rage Engine?
They do own the Rage Engine, yes.
They don't, I mean, they're really
not. Like, the rumors are that the early development for this game started as soon as Fallout 3 came out. Like, when they acquired the license, they for Fallout, they assumed that they were making multiple games. So I guess you could say, like, when did they acquire the Rage Engine? That was, like, in 2011?
It was after – it was actually very much speculated that this started development in terms of graphics well before they bought the Rage Engine.
Yeah.
I mean, whenever it was.
Like, my – I don't know about you guys, but like, for me, I love Fallout. I've actually played the Fallout 1 and 2 before Fallout 3, so I went into it like very big Fallout fan. I just love the atmosphere, like the 1950s sort of happy-go-lucky, really dark humor fitted on this like horrible post-apocalyptic wasteland. And I guess the difference is the trailer I'm thinking of is, I'm not sure if you guys remember, it was from E3 2008 for Fallout, which was like the little commercial about, oh, Vault Tech, you know, Vault is the future. And then, you know, like the juxtaposition between like that really happy music, you know, Dear Hearts and General, and then just people's heads being gibbed everywhere. And it's like that sort of, you know, the obvious violent humor and like the very, you know, black humor that the game has. But this trailer was like super serious, right? It's like, so it goes back between, you know, footage of people running before the war with a man and his little baby. Oh no, the baby died in the nuclear explosion. And then it's just like, it has obviously, you know, war never changes. But I mean, I found that to be maybe a little bit different from the tone of the other games. And I guess the interesting thing is, you saw a lot of cities in the trailer. And of course,
did you? I thought all of it was Boston.
Pardon? No, I mean like urban areas. Sorry. There's a bunch of places.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if like Boston as a whole is the dangerous area, but like you saw like a small urban environment that was a baseball diamond that had become a town.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be kind of funny to see Wellesley, Massachusetts on there, you know, as like this horrible little quaint town where androids are running around trying to kill you.
Or, like a secret group of, you know, cannibals or, it's like always interesting with those kinds of games. But also like, one thing is like, I guess maybe I'm just used to like the old Fallouts where it's just like wasteland for miles and miles. And then you run into a settlement. It's like, holy shit, it's a settlement of people. But I guess it's like it's now a shift where it seems like there's a big urban environment. I mean, the last
is that
game
a good thing? Isn't it a good thing or a bad thing?
Like, I always enjoyed Fallout 3 more than New Vegas because there was like nobody around, right? And it gave the feeling of atmosphere. But to be fair, that could have just been technological limitations more than the intention of the game makers themselves. And also, did you guys find it's like super colorful and clean? That's what I thought about the trailer
That's the big thing. Okay, so I love having you on the show, Noob, because I don't like Fallout at all. And to me, like this was like the opposite of what I wanted from Fallout in every way, save form. That's because I disagree with you. Because for me, it just looked like more Fallout. Really? The person who never, person who didn't play Fallout 3, it just looked like more fucking Fallout. Like, I know that the city is new, but that's understandable because apparently Boston is on West Coast was on the
unscathed. Yeah. Well, like, everywhere got fucked. Like, New Vegas was an exception because they built their own missiles or whatever. Right. DC, of course, total ruin. Yeah. Like, the entire game was based around wandering the ruins of DC. Like, the idea of, like, Boston as, like, this technological bastion that's survived much of the horrors of nuclear war.
Yeah.
I mean, but, like, it could be an
interesting... People were pointing out, like, things like, oh, that cradle was ultra blue. Right. Or, like, there's neon signs in that little city. I was like, shut up. I mean, those two things had color? Yeah, fuck you. Like, all right.
Well, it's like it seems like in the other games, everything was okay. Fallout 3, the predominant
color palette was brown.
It was green, and then New Vegas is brown orange, right?
Right.
It's like it's like, you know, moldy shit compared to, you know, like really orangey poo, and those are the two color palettes. So maybe it's just that, you know, computers today can afford to render paint. That might be the new. That might be just the new standard of technology.
Like, it was one of those things where I was like, this just looks like.
Yeah,
this looks like a nuclear wasteland, which is, to be fair, what
the game
about.
Yes, of
course. But like,
I guess
for me,
I'm sorry. I'm watching the trailer and I'm trying to remember what Fallout 3 looked like compared to Fallout 4. And
I think people are saying like it looks very similar. But having played Fallout 3 in the last couple of months, this is a fucking much bigger step up. Fallout 3, it's so jaggy that your eyes start. It's painful to look at some of the textures after a while because it's like everything's a sharp edge. Like, you feel like if you touched your monitor, your hands would get cut by how jagged the textures are. And it's like, even when that game came out, Fallout 3 was an ugly game when it came out. And I think
that's why it played so well on my computer back then.
Right. Oh, no, it ran like, well, it was so unoptimized, right?
Yeah.
It's like you were running through, you know, your waist in the ground and things like that. But I mean, in terms of the color palette it looks colorful. I don't know. Maybe I'm just used to ugly Fallout.
That's where we stand, right? Because, like, for me, my favorite post-apocalypse game, and this shouldn't be a surprise to anyone out there, is The Last of Us.
Right.
And if you want to talk about, like, a beautiful post-apocalypse, that's The Last of Us. Right. And obviously, the two different worlds, one's a biological catastrophe, one's a nuclear catastrophe.
Right.
So it would be a case where shit would just be irradiated and be brown and shit.
But also, like, The Last of Us, I guess, from, like, the two viewpointers, is it stylistic or is it simply the limitations of the engine back then?
Mm.
It's like, you could argue that Last of Us looked pretty because it was, you know, at the very edge of the last gen and, like, creeping into the next generation.
Yeah.
While, like, Fallout 3 came out in 2008, and it was on an engine that was essentially the Oblivion engine.
Right.
So it's like, you could sort of argue that way. Or it could have been just a stylistic choice where it's like, we can afford for our game to look like shit because it's a shitty world you're playing in. Right.
But, and I think this kind of proves, like, this kind of proves that it was, for the majority part, stylistic, because they're still going for that brown overall aesthetic. It's just that they do have that because the big thing they did change, obviously, aside from the quality textures, which is obvious because it's the next generation, is lighting. And lighting in this actually does look good.
Yes.
Yeah, it does look,
So the entire trailer is in-game. Some people thought it was CG at first. Like, I put it on the TV while we were eating dinner, and my dad's like, oh, this looks like a really old movie. And I'm like, no, that's a video game. And then he told me to turn the TV off. But it's like, I mean, for, like, considering, I guess, the very vast nature of the game and also, like, the predecessor and just what sort of engine it's based on, I guess it's sort of forgivable. I mean, that dog, the hairs on that dog don't look very good.
It looks like that looked like a fucking Barbie figurine.
Yeah.
That dog looked like my Barbie's dog. It was like, and everyone knows this by this point, but Bethesda isn't an animation studio.
Oh,
like, they're not Naughty Dog.
No, they are not.
But those animations, man.
I mean,
I mean, you don't have to live up to your reputation. You can try.
I
mean,
exactly.
Do a little better each time.
That, like, think,
like, holy cow.
The amount of time they need to mocap a dog is just, they just rigged it instead, and the guy just doesn't know how to rig animals.
I mean, the tail moves around. That's a huge improvement from what used to be the Fallout game. I'm telling you, that looks like a physics tail. The other one was like a friggin', it's like the tail was erect, like the dog's penis was its tail or something.
Oh, man.
But I see very cartoonish sort of, especially when that vault's opening, which like the vault 1111 or 111, 111D1, I forget already. 111. It just looks like a big cartoon. It looks like an XCOM almost. But yeah.
It's it definitely does have a cartoon look. Like if you look at like the game that this reminded me of would be BioShock Infinite.
Right. Oh yes. I see that.
Yeah, in terms of like look, because the people have that like kind of cartoony like characteristic to them. The dog is kind of broke it, and I'm surprised they went for that because it looks like they were trying to go for realistic and missed. That's the dog, but the people look so unrealistic and shit like, that they do look cartoony and interesting.
Exactly.
I think
because of the nature of the engine, and I think Skyrim pulled it off very well, where it's they're focusing on, you know, the placement of everything and the overall artistic
art
look of it.
Yeah.
I mean, Fallout or Skyrim, even without, you know, if you put on like your fancy ENBs and textures, it looks like a fantastic game just graphically. Yeah. But I mean, just on its own, playing it on a console, like looking at a big view of like the Aurora Borealis on a mountain. You can see the jagged edges on the textures, of course. But I mean, as like the whole to look at the portrait as a whole, it looks.
I honestly do think Skyrim when it came out was a gorgeous looking game.
Oh yes, absolutely. And those textures were super compressed too.
Yeah,
and I'm quite curious if at this point Bethesda's like for the people getting the game on the PC, because console it's not as big of a deal graphically because there's always going to be that bottleneck. It's like they can be like, yeah, modders are just going to put 18K textures, whatever. We don't really need to worry about that. That's what I want.
That's something I'm curious about is just like they the whole thing that like they tried to get the modding the pay for mods with Skyrim. Do you think they were like preparing that for Fallout? And
well, they specifically said when they quit the paid modding thing, where it's like, you know, we're going to try a different game at a different time. And I think for PC, this is definitely going to be a Steamworks game because Bethesda was, you know, pretty close with Valve in terms of releasing their games together. So I think this might be their pilot platform for that. And I like, you know, other than like the evil, greedy aspects aside, like, you know, Bethesda generally, you know, really likes their modders. They're always good at releasing mod tools and things like that. You know, Garden of Eden Creation Kit and things like that, specifically on the release of their game. So immediately it becomes viable. But it's like, I just hope this isn't a broken game like Fallout 3. I hope it's like they're not relying on the modders to like fix the game for them, because that would be a big bummer. Because if your game looks this ugly, you expect it to run at least a little bit better.
Aside from the hilarious bugs, Skyrim was actually not too bad.
Oh, like, Skyrim was an excellent experiment, right? Like especially over Fallout New Vegas or Fallout 3, which was just a mess to play. It was nearly unplayable near release.
I remember when you opened that vault for the first time. Just that shakiness, the frame rate drops to like 2.
Immediately. It's like, oh my god, lights in a video game? Oh, it can't just be drab. Yeah. I mean, I guess...
I think the big problem... because we'll move on from graphics in a second.
Yeah.
But I think the big problem with the fact that people, this is the footage they put out and people are really being critical of it is two things. One, The Witcher just came out.
Yep,
and that game looks goddamn spectacular, especially when you see it to scale ago. But two, The Witcher is a fantastic example of a trend that's been happening this generation of pre-release footage looking better than the final game.
Right.
And if that's the case with this, whole world of hurt.
That would be horrible if this is like their high watermark. This is like, you need a supercomputer to run
but
this.
But it is. This is their pre-release, probably running on a beefy PC footage.
Right. Yeah, probably.
And that's kind of scary.
Go ahead, actually, yeah.
Yeah, so look at it like this. I'm looking at the website, right? And I noticed that, you know, of course, everywhere it says pre-order. Yeah. How much of the game do you think is done? I mean, once you consider we're saying pre-order now, I would assume within the next 6 to 8 months it's released. Pre-order.
I'm thinking of like that same 11/11 date for that came out for Skyrim, simply because like this game, it was entirely in engine, right? And I think E3, I think that's where they're going to have, because first showcase, they're probably going to have actual gameplay, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems like this is a very ready game. Like, it doesn't look that crazy. This isn't very conceptual. This looks very, like, okay, I can see myself playing this soon.
I'm going the opposite direction on this, man.
Really?
I think that this is a lot of concept footage, and I think that this
are
is...
Are you hoping? Or
oh, if this is their concept think, footage, I am fucking horrified to figure out what it looks
E3,
like in real life.
They'll be playing a very good-looking slash complete-looking vertical slice for their conference. I think they're just going to spend like a good 15, 20 minutes on Fallout 4. I think it'll be 11, 11, 2016.
Well, I mean... Really? Because the Skyrim trailer was at the their announcement was the VGA's 2010, right?
Right.
But that was near the end of the year, and then it came out exactly a year after. So I'm more betting on like late this year or early next year.
Maybe. I'd say maybe early next year. But
the thing about the Skyrim trailer too, when it came out on the VGA's, was there was no gameplay. Like this is more like the Skyrim trailer with like when they actually had the gameplay, maybe.
Yeah.
At E3. Yeah. So I don't know.
It'd be interesting to see. I'm excited to see that Three Dogs is going to be back doing his rapist stuff.
Dog.
Probably on a TV this time, because it looked like the Galaxy Network, whatever the fuck it was. It's like before it was Galaxy Radio, now it's Galaxy Network. Yeah. Like if you look at this, GameSpot does a pretty great breakdown with Danny O'Dwyer and I forget who else of every part of the trailer. They do a stop and start of the trailer.
Yeah.
And they point out, it's probably going to be a TV network this time that you're watching.
Wow, TV. Well, I guess it makes sense from a very futuristic sort of survived the nuclear war.
I mean, it'd be kind of cool if I could walk and then look at my Pip-Boy as I'm walking and kind of see the background maybe haze out a little bit, but I could keep walking. And then
pausing the entire game.
Because I mean, I am not a big fan of like, you know, in GTA and other games where you just sit on a couch and watch some stupid infomercial that they've spent hours on animating or making. Like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not that into the Sims aspect of these games.
Well, that's why the nice thing about this game is like, or the franchises, you always had the radio, right? So you could just listen to it while walking around and just get a bite of the story and the music. And it's like this is one of those games where like the music works so well, especially with the gameplay, despite being so contrasting, you know, like the happy 1950s music to just brutal violence.
I mean, I found myself buying multiple tracks from these old songs
just
to listen
fantastic.
To in the car.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh cool, I'm driving around in the Fallout universe listening to the music.
I have a fair amount of songs from BioShock and Fallout.
Yeah.
So this is a good question to pose to you guys since we're kind of here. What do you guys want from Fallout 4?
Not VATS. A good target. Well, see, that's the thing is like I like the world of Fallout 3. I like the immense quest. I only got like 15 hours into that game because I just couldn't stand being forced to use VATS for every single shot. Like I'm okay with the VAT system if it is just like an available option.
Yes.
But like the aiming and the shooting in that game, like it was not up to par in terms of like you had to use VATs sometimes, and then it felt like you have to use VATs all the time. Then and then if you're using VATs like you know the first 20 times it's cool, the next 200 times it gets really like grindy and trying.
Yeah. Then it slows you down. It feels like you're pausing to do what you want to be able to do very quickly, and that is decapitate people.
I mean, like, I guess for a console, that is a more, like, that is an okay feeling because it's much harder to aim with a console than it is with a mouse, but I was playing it on PC. I was like, hey, I can easily see the guy's, like, head with the crosshair. Let me just shoot him in that.
Oh, yeah. But you have to do a dice roll, so it missed.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
That's true. I forgot about
that. Well, the nice thing
you
about,
guys...
yeah. Yeah.
Would you guys want this to be like, say, what if this was like a Mass Effect 1 to Mass Effect 2? What if they actually have decent shooting in this game? What do you guys
think? That was the big jump from New Vegas to Fallout 3 in the sense that Obsidian developed New Vegas, but obviously off of Bethesda assets. But like aiming actually mattered, right? You had to actually aim the gun to be able for it to be hit. And you actually had crosshairs. So, I mean, I doubt they're just going to go backwards from there. I think they're going to build on what Obsidian did. But it's like a question of like, you know, that fine line between like an RPG game and a shooting game is like, what's the benefit of constantly bumping up your shooting skill if you just know how to aim with a mouse and keyboard? So I think they need to find that delicate line of what's the point of the RPG once you're at a certain point in a first person shooter game.
Yeah.
I have to say, I love the way Mass Effect did it, where they took out the shooting skill And they just put in like damage buffs that you'd be specking into and that kind of stuff.
I mean, my favorite way of doing it in terms of like making scaling into like a proficiency for a weapon was how Deus Ex did it. Was like you start off, once you target someone, you got a large crosshair, and then if you kept the crosshair aimed at that person, it would shrink down, and it's sort of like, hey, this is the size where your shot could land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really cool. I hated it, but it was a cool idea.
Yes,
for the original Deus Ex, I could not stand it, but it was a cool idea.
But like, it made you like, okay, let's put some points into shooting, so I don't have to deal with this anymore.
Oh man, oh, it could be like The Last of Us, where you put points in to get less sway, which is really interesting in how they handled that.
Sway. I guess for me, like, I think what Bethesda does best, and I think Interplay before, who developed Fallout before, is like atmosphere more than anything, scale and atmosphere. Their characters are shit. Their stories aren't that great, except some of the side stories. But atmosphere in the sense of, you know, just the scale, just the feeling that the game gives, the ambience of it, and also just the dialogue where, you know, there's that sort of bleak black humor everywhere you sort of turn to. There's some sort of ridiculous cannibal side plot and things like that, where it's like almost, it's like a caricature of what you would think a post-apocalyptic nightmare sort of would be. I think if they built on that, word, like they built the story in a way that it wasn't taking you out of the game so much, but as it just feels like just a part of this natural world. It's like, of course that would happen in a Fallout game. I think if they focused that instead of just like crazy Dragonborn stories or something like that, and probably do better with factions, because factions were cool in New Vegas, but there were only three, which was a bummer.
From what it's showing, I mean, you know, they're obviously teasing a speaking protagonist now, which is going to be very interesting. And you know, you kind of made that tie into the Mass Effect universe. I'm kind of hoping for as good a story as Mass Effect 2 and 3 were.
That's an incredible expectation for a company that does not do great stories. I'll tell you that. BioWare are storytellers. Bethesda makes immersive games, I guess.
I mean, well, and I don't know. That's kind of, I guess, what I'm hoping from it. But,
it's again one of those difficult things, because, again, The Witcher 3 just came out. And I hate to harp on the game, but I swear, like, a side quest in The Witcher 3 is comparable to 99% of the best stories, aside from the pinnacle, like Dark Brotherhood, of what Bethesda has made.
Yeah, yeah, they are not great at stories, absolutely. But I mean, like, again, it's the humor of it, right? The best, I feel like the best Fallout, and I think it's one of those games where literally actions speak louder than words. The dialogue's always weak, but you can always shoot that dude in the head if you want to. And I think that's the interesting part, where you can literally, you know, light a person's village on fire where you're not, you know, doing dialogue. That's why I think like the dialogue thing is going to be a big departure from that, where it's like, if they are focusing on crafting better dialogue, that could be a good thing, or it could be a horrible thing where it doesn't really work, where your dialogue does not match your actions. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So
That's the thing. Like, do you guys think, we're hitting on this point of the internet seems to be divided to some large degree of having a protagonist that talks, which is looking to be the case for this next Fallout. What do you guys actually think with that? Would you guys want that, or is it just a case of you thinking it means they're focusing on dialogue more?
I will say, as I watched the trailer, when like the final like line happened and the words were said by Troy Baker, not Trey Boyker.
Was it fucking Troy Baker?
It sounded like him.
Goddamn, another Troy Baker.
It sounded like him, and that's why I said, no, come on.
I don't know. I'm kind of hoping that, you know, when you do have a, I don't remember how, I can't remember how Mass Effect 3 did it, to be honest, because it's been so long since I played it. But you know, when you say, like, you know, I fucking hate you is one of your options as a selection, you know, your speech options or something like that. I would hope that the character actually says something that affect, not just that, you know, I say that and then that's what I did say, but I don't hear my character say it. They respond, and then my character would respond. You know, I hope they do a good job. If they are going to do a protagonist speaking, I hope they just do a fantastic job with it, because they got one shot with it to do it right, or it's really going to look bad on them, in my opinion.
You guys have very positive expectations compared to
I have hopes. I have high hopes.
No, we have positive like standards we want met.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, like,
the bar is raised since the last Fallout game came out.
Right.
I mean, just because you started making this 7 years ago doesn't mean you get to keep this or whatever it is. You get to keep the same bullshit rhetoric.
I mean, like,
and then try to fucking throw in a bandage every now and then to make it seem somewhat okay.
Or just rely on modders. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, the problem is your character is such a blank slate. You're literally just the courier or the lone wanderer or the vault dweller. It's like the entire idea is like you're just pouring your actions, and just that's what, you know, the karma system makes your character, not particularly the characterization by the game itself. Right. So, I mean, if they're taking it into a story thing, it's like how much – I guess one of the things that threw me off in The Witcher is like, you know, you are playing Geralt. I mean, you can sort of play, you know, what kind of Geralt he's playing. But, I mean, decisively, he's still, you know, the
everything you can do in
The
Witcher is still in the spectrum of what Geralt would do.
But, I mean, in like Fallout, one time you can help – you know, a little lady cross the road and then you can murder her grandchildren or something to that effect, right? Where it's so like pure evil, pure good, and a very wide, you know, spectrum of neutral. And it's like, to a certain degree, I think voice acting could detract from that. I feel like.
But what do you think the chances are you become like either really good or dark and evil in this game, and your character appearance starts changing based on that? Almost like
Mass Effect. Yeah. Exactly. BioWare loves the facial changing. They have it in SWTOR too, where if your character does dark actions, they just have really wrinkly dark
faces. That makes sense in universe.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for the Force. But I mean, some characters don't use the Force. Like,
no, you have radiation. This character has radiation. So yeah.
The more evil you are, the more receptive you are to horrible radioactive disease. Yeah.
What would you guys say if say let's just throw it out there, if they do actually have you playing a character in Fallout 4? What if it's a named character?
That's what they hinted in the horrible leak, where it's like, you're a character, you know, your wife and children die. And it's like, okay, sure.
I mean, it doesn't bother me, the character has to be so well defined that I don't mind not playing the character the way I would want to play. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I don't want
to. Sure. Like, you don't feel like, oh, this isn't what this character would do with it. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, or give me it has to have the choices, and it has to have that intimacy that I want to build with the character throughout it. So hopefully they don't fuck it up. But I mean, that's
the best. Good luck. Good luck, Bethesda. The expectations for this game are fucking ridiculously high at this point, I think.
And a lot will be answered.
Oh yeah,
at E3.
Yep.
Oh, we're gonna get into that.
Well, okay. So, I propose that we do a full E3 episode next weekend. So break our 2 week, like break every other week stint, and actually have a back to back set of weeks and do an E3 episode. What do you guys say? So
then we have the Amiibo episode after that, right? Where we talk about all the Amiibos that we're trying to acquire.
Any other news anyone wants to talk about? I can't think
Amiibos
of anything
are crazy.
I'm not even bringing that up. Like, I don't give a shit.
Steam gear available to purchase on the Steam store. You can now get your Steam Link, your Steam controller, and your Steam machine.
Really?
The Steam controller, I don't know what it is in US dollars, $59.99 Canadian.
It's
50 US dollars. Same with the Steam Link. Steam machines start at about $400, $450 USD.
Such a horrible processor they got in there.
Yeah, it's
what's the Steam Link?
The Steam Link is the thing where you can stream
the Roku
any
box.
Game at 1080p to a
Twitch. Oh, okay. Right. So from your PC.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. 1080p though. And then you can get those bundled. I'm not sure, like, for me, the big question is this going to be the same control as the Steam VR? If not, I'm not going to buy this.
I bet it's not.
It might be a controller that works with Steam VR, but Steam VR I thought was like those two.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about HTC Vive. Steam VR is HTC Vive. That's those two ones.
Okay, I'm not buying this. Yeah. From what I read about an early iteration, they've gone through massive changes. It's not that great. but they could be completely different now because Valve likes to rework
things. It took Sony 20 years to come up with a DualShock 4.
I mean, like, I would not be surprised if there will be like a varying reviews for this, if only because some people will get it expecting it to perform, like to behave and fulfill roles of a controller that Valve is not trying to, like, they'll expect it to be able to play COD with it. And no, that's what the controllers of other like games are for. Like, it's designed for playing like Crusader Kings or like Papers, Please or some other like.
I cannot imagine playing a game like that with a controller. I know. Bleed out of my fingernails.
You're playing with two trackpads. That's what you're. Yeah. Like that's the thing.
When I used the controller when it was the two trackpad, which I don't think there is anymore. It's not the two touch.
I think there's like one D. Yeah. I think one's a trackpad. It is like a D-pad
right. Or something. I enjoyed playing. I thought it was kind of cool and innovative to have the two trackpad feel with the force feedback. I don't know what they've done with the new one that's officially being released, but I remember playing. I guess it was the second iteration of it at one of the packs. And I thought it was pretty cool. I would have loved to have gotten my hands on that and actually gone into production just because.
Does the final version doesn't have two trackpads?
It looks like it could be a trackpad.
It has two. It has like a directional, it looks like, maybe for a force feedback directional. But it also does have the I'm doing some, I'm like, you can actually.
The stick. It's got a stick, right?
It has a stick, but it also has a pad where you could do the whole, like.
It's on the Steam store page. It's just a big banner. Yeah. I mean, it looks like an Xbox controller very, very much. It does not look like a DualShock.
Huh. But so I think the bigger news in terms of Steam this week, and I'd totally forgotten it until you brought that up, was they're now offering refunds.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's a big thing.
So fuck that we finally have a online store that has real consumer policies.
Other platforms have had proper consumer policies.
Yeah, for a while. GOG has had refunds for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
So So the Valve thing is, I'm not sure if this is coming off the European Union trying to fine Valve over it, but it's like 14 days after purchase or 2 hours of gameplay, you can refund. But even if you exceed that, you can put in a refund ticket. But good luck considering the quality of Steam.
Why would you buy a game without knowing what you're getting into? With all the media outlets and all the videos that are done on games and all the coverage. At what point would I say I accidentally bought this game?
So one of the examples they gave was actually a really good one, which was
sale.
Which was if you buy a game and then 2 weeks later it's on sale, they fully expect you.
That's good on them. Yeah.
Or maybe it's an early access title that you get with the hype and then it's like, oh, this game is crap.
That's going to be your really big...
But that's your fault. I mean, come on. I mean, really?
Right. I'm sort of on Squiddle's viewpoint where it's like, I think, like, buyer beware is your problem, not... Yeah, I mean, unless it's, like, survivor infestation stories where they just clearly lied, that's one thing. But to, you know, it's sort of the consumer's job to figure out what they're buying.
I agree, buyer beware. However, I imagine, like, Valve is either doing this to like assuage people who don't subscribe to the notion of buyer beware and just want to complain to somebody, and for some reason Valve is doing it because they're tired of all the complaints, or maybe there are statistics that will, like, even with the refund policy, people may buy stuff and not get around to returning it, or like get it with the whole thing of like, okay, I'm comfortable now that I know I can return this, and then don't care about it and get lazy. Like they might see this as making more money. I don't know. There are a million reasons why this is an okay idea and not an okay idea.
I think the interesting point is one that Squids like touched upon, though, was like, if you do buy a game on early access specifically, that this kind of changes the whole early access scape. Because in many cases, you only do play one of those games for like 2 hours or less.
I mean, if it's on early access. Is this policy being held for early access games? Because I would say no. If I was running
it shouldn't be.
I would say early access is beta. Is you may not know what you're getting into, but you are taking a chance. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But if it's you knew up front, it said early access on the box. you click that thing and it's now yours. Yeah. It's if they do allow you to refund early access games, that could wreck that entire market.
Because that hurts developers, and then you know it's.
It just means developers need to wait until they have a quality product before putting it on Steam.
Yep.
Well, this is
the part where I'm like, okay, the refund policy is good I've been fucked by but they also use
people out there to test their stuff. I mean, that's what the whole idea of early access is it not? I mean, is my game good? Are there issues with my game?
But I mean, there's a lot of problems with early access where they make the game and then they abandon it. That is a problem. Like where you're seeing an update once a year and it's like nothing like they advertised, where it's almost just a scam. Yeah,
but this isn't going to protect you from that at all.
Plus, as a game developer, there are other ways to get testing done beyond just having someone pay for it, making that person possibly feel like they are invested and like can give or like the input they give should be taken seriously. Kind of like the same thing with Kickstarter, of just like, hey, we're making this game, and then the person who donates like $1,000 feels like they should be able to give input and. Make the game like make their game, not the game that the developers want to make.
Right.
Sorry for interrupting. Sorry.
Yeah. No. That's absolutely a valid point. I just, in the end, I think it's a kind of a gray area because I think that the whole like argument of some games are only 2 hours long, or a lot of people only play 2 hours of a game. I wonder how much money. Like this will take out of the industry.
Man, I would have saved so much money if this thing was around.
Like I have a Steam sales, right? Yeah. Like there's so many instances of Steam sales and being like massively successful for developers. Oh, but if those same people were given an option like 14 days later, it's like, hey, you haven't played this game that you bought in the Steam sale for 14 days. Do you want to refund it?
Absolutely.
I guess I consume games on Steam differently than the next person, of course, and the next person, because I don't buy a game unless I know I either want it just so I know I have it for whatever reason, or I know it's going to be a fun game to play. Now,
you are absolutely the minority.
Yeah. Okay.
So many people like myself who have it's like, oh, I'm going to be losing money if I don't buy this now. Time to spend $50 on this early access game because it's 15% off, and then to realize like. I have like 400 games on Steam. I've played maybe half of them. Half of them.
See, I just now recently broke 100.
Exactly. Yep. And I've only just recently broke 30. Like, sorry, 40.
Are we talking games we played or total games?
Just total games on Steam. I think me and Squids are the vast minority. It is a case of like, most people just buy shit. Whoa, they're within just like.
Damn, dude.
Damn.
I know people who have way more than me.
Yeah, that's true. It's going to be a game-changing thing. I think I'm with Boogie 2988 or on YouTube in saying that even if it does change the game, I don't think anyone can point to this and say it'll change the game negatively because the consumer is getting more choice or the buyer is getting more choice. And Derb is right. If people do see the fact that many of their games getting returned, it'll just incentivize them to put up a better game in the first place.
Also, like this now kills the fucking bullshit reasons a lot of people have when they pirate games where it's like, well, I just want to see if it's good or not. That's why I'm pirating it. I'll buy it normally. Now it's like, why are you pirating games? You can actually do this for real.
You can download it, play it for 2 hours if you don't like it.
So I'm really interested to see what pirates like. I'm totally like pirating whatever, but if you're going to bullshit justify, like what's the point? Why are you justifying your piracy? So I'm excited to see what kind of excuse they'll pull out.
Because I don't want my card charged right away. Yeah. I want it to be free until I really, really want it.
Yeah. It's like, you know, and it's like, it's not like stealing because it's like, you're not taking anything, but it would, it's like the app comparison is like you're stealing a service or like walking into a movie theater, watching half of an hour of a movie and deciding you don't like it. It's kind of like that. Or like,
man.
There have been times where I've watched a movie in a theater and then said, you know what, I'm going to go see what's playing in this one and just kind of walk in and grab a seat.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I've also had times where I paid for a movie and left halfway through. So it's sort of like,
yeah.
That's what happens. If you don't like it, maybe you should have looked a bit harder.
Man.
I've had something completely different happen that was even weirder. So my friend, we went to see a movie and the person gave us the ticket ticket said one theater. We did not read the ticket because we judged what the person, the lady who gave us the ticket said, and she told us a different theater. We showed up, and it just happened to be like a pitch black scene, and we were a little bit late, and so we're like, all right, well, maybe it's just all right. Sit down, and then like stuff's happening, and people are dying, and we're like, okay, maybe they're doing like the end first, and then it's going to flash back to it. And then 10 minutes later, credits. And my friend, who was the one, like, I was just going with him, he just wanted to see it, and he was just like, what's going on? We go back out, and like, we get sent to the wrong theater.
Nice.
And he was just like, inconsolable. Like, they tried offering him, like, you want like credit? You want to go in and watch like watch the rest of like from the original theater, which we would have missed like the first 30 to 45 minutes.
Damn.
Right.
Wow.
So it's like he was just like,
did you watch the end of the movie you were gonna go see, or was this a completely different movie that you watched
I think we ended up just going to see I don't remember what we did, but like, yeah, we could have seen the same movie twice, but not the first half of it.
Oh,
so it was the end of the movie that you were playing.
Oh, okay, yeah, because they have that. Some theaters play like multiple screenings of the same movie if it's popular. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the weirdest thing that I've done in a movie theater.
Wow.
Yeah.
And with that, and the promise for E3 talk next week, I don't think there's anything else that we can really. Is there anything else for news just to wrap up the show?
No.
Guys, let's play Elder Scrolls Online. Said nobody ever.
Jesus. Thanks for listening. We're going to plugs. Yeah.
It's Steam sale. Steam sale. I think the leak date next Thursday. Summer sale.
If you want to trust the Russians, the Steam sale is the middle of the week that we're posting this.
Yeah. So that might happen.
If you want to trust the Russians, which
is kind of like sideways either way, because if you're listening to this, it's probably happening right now or tomorrow. In which case, you'll find out.
Yeah.
So yeah, Doubleton, any plugs for this week? Aside from the two movies you already plugged?
Yeah, just the stuff on Netflix. I Know That Voice and Stripped. Other than that, no, I don't think I have any plugs.
Cool. So yeah, check those out. So they're on US Netflix. I don't think they're on Australian. I've had a poke around and see them, but I'll have a look again. But there are other ways to get those movies. New Brahma, any plugs?
PC Gaming Hub, as always, and that book, China's Second Continent, really interesting.
Yep.
Good book.
High five. Squiddle, any plugs?
I recommend, if you haven't done it in a while, go ahead and sit down and marathon all the Beverly Hills Cop movies. They're on Netflix. it's a great time, and...
I can't disagree. That's amazing. Yeah, that's a fucking amazing way to spend a weekend. God damn it. That's brilliant, yes.
or a weekday, if you're an out-of-job... a techie like me. So anyway, that's pretty much it, I guess, for me.
I have a plug for something that is on the Australian Netflix and was amazing in many ways. The Ace Attorney live action movie.
Oh my God. What?
What?
I didn't know this was a thing until I saw it on Netflix on my recommended, and they were right, because holy shit, if you want to see random crazy Japanese dudes in huge wigs.
Wait, what is this called? Wait, what?
Like Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, there's a live action movie called Ace Attorney. Made in Japan with Japanese actors in all the major parts, but their hairstyles are like the game. So if someone had like massive spiky blonde hair but was Japanese in the game, he's gone. Oh my God. It's brilliant. Is it
dubbed at all? If it was to be dubbed, that'd be awesome.
Oh, no, I'm trying to remember. No. It was subtitled. It was not
okay. Oh my God.
It was a revelation, I have to tell you. Because like it was, the game knows it's dumb, but seeing that in live action and the extra level, like multiple levels of dumbness that generates.
Brilliant.
Oh man. Highly recommended. If you want
to. Is it overacted too?
It's absolutely.
Like fingers. Oh.
It is like the game, and the game is essentially anime. So imagine people acting like anime in live action.
Oh.
I remembered my plug.
Yes, though.
If you are a fan of history, it's called Hardcore History. It's a podcast done by Dan Carlin. It's like once a month, but that dude does his homework. It is a well done thing. It's quality over quantity. But it's, yeah, Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
That's the only, only podcast I know.
That recommendation.
Yeah, the only podcast I know that's like 4 hours plus long on on just one part of an entire topic. So that's great.
Sick. Also recommended by one Brad Shoemaker. And with that, thank you for listening to this episode of the Scotchcast. See you next week, the week before E3. Fuck yeah.